Propel. Can you see it, sir?
I can see the agendas.
Okay. I think we can start.
Okay, good. Good morning, everybody, and greetings once more to all our audience. I acknowledge all of you, and a special word of welcome to our guest.
This meeting is being recorded.
My name is Faiz Jacobs, a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Small Business, and today is one of our usual sittings. We want to welcome everybody. Let's start with still a moment of silence. Yesterday we had a memorial and a message of condolences to our late chairperson of this portfolio, Comrade Ma Violet Sizwela. So if I can ask your indulgence, and let's all have a moment of silence. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Okay, we will, before I do the purpose of the meeting, I assume we have a quorum, Mr. Kunene.
Yes, Chair.
Okay, good. All right, colleagues, today's purpose of the Small Business Portfolio Committee is to look at cannabis, hemp, and the challenges that the industry faces, especially with relation to our portfolio, the small business sector. So last week, we welcomed the passage of the Cannabis for Private Purpose Bill. The President signed it into law, and we welcomed the step, and it was a long time coming, and it's a great step forward in terms of decriminalizing cannabis for private use, as required by the Constitutional Court judgment. Remember, some time back, decriminalization for personal use is unconstitutional, and so therefore Parliament was directed to decriminalize and also look at commercializing the cannabis bill. And so the private use bill is doing that. We support the bill because it provides a rational legal framework for the use of cannabis in private. For private purpose, it will end the obligation for unnecessary arrest and imprisonment of persons using cannabis for personal use in their privacy, whilst serious crime is not being dealt with. So we know that a lot of young people, especially from historically previously disadvantaged communities, were having criminal records because of cannabis. We also recognize the use of the Rastafarians for using it for religious practice. And so the bill tries to find a balance between complying with the Constitutional Court, decriminalizing cannabis, and also regulating the development of the medicinal and the commercial sector. I think decriminalization will help a long way and removing this industry from the control of criminals and syndicates, and also will provide needed jobs and also useful medical, commercial, and industrial good for cannabis and hemp in particular. There's variety commercial products that we use hemp and cannabis for, the medicinal, clothing, construction, manufacture, and all other legitimate uses. So the bill that has been passed by the President helps for this, and also the master plan has been developed. So with that context, I'm sharing that today's session is where we're going to listen to presentations from different industry leaders, representatives of industry. I think the first presentation will talk to some of the opportunities and challenges in the cannabis.
college's members. I think our chairperson has got that connection problem, so just wait a bit for him to try and reconnect.
Right here.
Hello, hello, ma'am.
Morning.
My apologies. My apologies. I got cut momentarily, so I'm not sure where I stopped, but I was doing the briefing. Just to conclude on the briefing of the South African Health Products Regulatory on the licensing process and also how the process will be eased so that everybody, including small businesses, can be part of the process. So those are our engagements for today. With that, I want to welcome all the members again and invite members to actively participate. Hopefully we'll have engaging sessions and we'll learn and also get industry leaders to educate and also we can ask oversight questions. So with that, as an introduction, I want to invite Mr. Kunene to do quick roll calls and apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the platform here, we've got Nkosi Luthuli, Honorable Mieni, Honorable Thumelang, Honorable Hendricks, Honorable Mula, Honorable April, Honorable Lubengo. And then I do have apologies from Honorable Kruger and Honorable De Villiers. They send their apologies in writing, and then on the side of the visitors, we got a rep from M4Life by the name of Mr. Ben, and then we also have Dr. Tandira Kunene from the House of Hemp, and then we also have a representative from SAPRA. So the two representatives from SAPRA. So I was more concerned about those who will be making the presentation, Chair. So those are the people who are in the platform, and of course the officials from Parliament and from the department. So I see the end of Honorable Tromela.
Thank you, Mr. Kunene. Work over to you.
Morning, Chair. I wanted to check if Brykin did see the message from the Portfolio Committee chat group where Honorable Mabika says he has apologized because he was involved in an accident with the wife. So he won't be able to attend the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Work. Thank you, Honorable Work, for letting us know. I hope it's not serious, but we're sending him well wishes. Honorable Mabika is our DA representative, and he's just shared a message now. And thank you, Work, for sharing that. We'll record that also formally as an apology, Mr. Kunene. And with that, apologies and also noting your presence, I invite members to adopt this agenda.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you, Honorable Lubengo.
I second Chairperson. Oh.
Welcome, Jan. Thank you. Second. With that, members, we want to be as businesslike as possible, and we'll start with the first presentation. Our representative from Hemp for Life, the floor and the platform is yours, and we'll give you sharing rights. Welcome.
Mr. Chairperson, thank you very much for the introduction, and also thank you for the opportunity for me to present here today. I will be sharing my screen. I think the administrator needs to give me permission to share. Or the host has to enable me to share as well.
Yes, Mr. Pen, I'm trying to.
Oh, okay. Okay.
To do that, I don't know why is it. Is not showing me that. Nomta. Can you try to make Mr. Pen, to give Mr. Pen sharing right to make a co-host?
Okay.
Because I see he made me a co-host, that is why I can't.
Why are you a co-host? Okay.
You see him for life, yeah. There you are, Mr. Pen.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. I just want to give a bit about myself. I'm Ben Sassman, 57 years old, and I'm a Cape Town boy, but I've been working and living in Johannesburg for the last 24 years, just came back to Cape Town 11 months ago. I've got a background in human resources. I've also worked for two foreign governments doing trade and investment for the United States Foreign Commercial Services, and then I worked for the UK Trade and Investment under the British High Commission. I started my own business in 2012, where I promoted business between South Africa and other African countries. Last 5 years, I've been specializing in working in Botswana, doing bilateral trade and investment. And 2022, I registered Hemp for Life to get into the hemp industry or the hemp space. And that's where I find myself now. Last week, the 27th of February, I presented to the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development. I just felt that there was a major disconnect between what the lawmakers were coming up with, the rules and the regulations for the cannabis and hemp sector, but it was not working well with the actual farmers, because the farmers are struggling on the ground, and the rules and regulations set up by government and also the input from SAPRA was not helping the farmers become profitable in the sectors. The meeting was attended by the Deputy Minister of Rural Development, Honorable Kapa, who also gave some good input at the end of the presentation about the direction of the industry and the problems that she's also encountered in the field. I know we've got SAPRA online here and some other participants that knows the industry, but I just wanted to explain the difference between cannabis and hemp. People need to understand it's two different plants, it's two different sectors, two different industries, even though they're regulated under one umbrella. If you have hemp and cannabis plants together, they both look the same, they feel the same, and they also smell the same. To the untrained eye, it's very difficult to tell them apart. Personally, I can tell you if it's a male or female plant, but they're just looking at a cannabis and hemp plant, they both are the same. The only big difference between the two is the THC levels in the plant, which is the tetrahydrocannabinol. Now, THC is when you smoke cannabis and you get the high, that is the THC level in the plant. So cannabis can go from 15% to 25% genetically engineered. It can go up to 35% THC levels and sometimes higher. So if you talk about 35% and above, that is usually commonly referred to as the good kush when people smoke it. But hemp, on the other hand, the THC levels is only 0.2%. Anything above that is regarded as cannabis, and it's high THC levels, so it will not fall under hemp. So what that means is if you smoke a hemp joint the size of a street pole, it's not going to give you a high. There's no THC in it, so it's not used for smoking. We also know about CBD, which is cannabinoids. Now, the CBD content in the plant is used for pain medication, for pain relief. It's used as a Schedule 1, the same level as morphine or any oxy-level medication, which is good for pain relief. Now, because of the THC levels in the two different plants, they are regulated by two different agencies. So SAHPRA looks after cannabis because of the high THC levels, and agriculture looks after hemp because of the low THC levels. I just want to also point out about the revenue generation around the two plants. So if you have a kilogram of cannabis and a kilogram of hemp, now a kilogram of cannabis sells between 16,000 and 20,000 rand per kilogram, and hemp, a kilogram, sells between 5 and 11 rand a kilogram. So hemp in its raw form is not financially feasible, it's not profitable at all. So just to give you a calculation, if you're looking at 50 hectares, which is 50 rugby fields, you cultivate cannabis and hemp, you're going to end up with the same amount of biomass, 14,700 kilograms. Now, if you sell the cannabis, 14,000 kilograms, you're going to walk away with 13 million rand. But if you sell the hemp in its raw form, 14,000 kilograms, you're only going to walk away with 73,000 rand. So hemp is not profitable as a raw material. Hemp has to be processed into crude oil. So if you start off with 14,000 kilograms of raw material biomass, if you can process that into 3,700 kilograms of crude oil, CBD crude oil, that you can then process into a CBD isolate, which is in a powder form. It looks like baking powder or cake flour. And you'll end up with 448 kilograms. And that, if you sell it on the international market, you can walk away with 4.8 million rand. But to get there is a bit of a process. So I just want to explain from seed to client. If you plant your cannabis seed, the crop will grow for 4 months before you can harvest it as an adult plant. And all that the cannabis farmers do is they harvest the flower or the bud, this part of the plant, and they just trim the leaves off the side, and that is the product that they then sell to their client. So it's a very short, just growing it, harvesting it, trimming it, and selling it. That's the process for cannabis. Hemp, on the other side, if you plant your hemp seed, it also takes 4 months to mature into an adult plant. And when you harvest hemp, you're basically just removing the roots from the plant. But the stem, the stalk, the leaves, everything gets shredded into biomass. That you then have to put through a drying process. You can either dry it before you shred it, or you can dry it through a drying machine afterwards to remove 90% of the moisture from the plant. That you can then put through a milling process to mill it into a powder, which then gets put into an extractor plant. Now, extractor plants are not cheap. They range from anything from 500,000 rand to 9 million rand an extractor plant. And using chemicals like CO2, ethanol, and a host of other chemicals, you can then convert, also through a winterization process, you can convert your biomass into crude oil and then also into CBD isolate. And once you have either the crude oil or the isolate, you can then sell it to your client. So the process for cannabis is a short, cost-effective process. Hemp, to make it feasible for the farmer, it has to go through a lengthy process to make it feasible. The Department of Agriculture has issued over 371 hemp permits to people like myself that has a hemp permit. SAPRA, the last time I checked, has 102 licenses which they've issued to applicants. Now, the process is very similar. The requirements are very similar, but SAPRA is a more costly exercise for farmers applying for licenses. I just want to touch on what the politicians are saying. Everyone, all the premiers and the MECs wants their province to be the cannabis or the hemp hub of South Africa. So these are just some articles I pulled off the internet where the premier of Gauteng wants Gauteng to be the hub of South Africa. The MEC of the Free State wants the Free State to be the capital for South Africa. Western Cape, the same. Eastern Cape, Gauteng. All the premiers and the MECs, even the president has spoken about the job opportunities that can be created through the cannabis and hemp sector. KZN also wants to be the main exporter of cannabis. Everyone is excited about the master plan, about SAPRA, the licenses and agriculture, the permits that are now being issued to the public. But I'm on two different WhatsApp groups with cannabis and hemp license and permit holders. There's a total of 261 members on these two groups. But looking at all the members, no one is being funded by the government. None of the hemp permit holders or the cannabis license holders are being funded by government agencies. Zero of them. My presentation to agriculture last week was about the rules and regulations that's crippling the industry even before it has started. But what I want to do here today is to personalize my presentation from here about my experiences, what I've gone through for the last 2 years. Now, I started looking for funding 2 years ago after I received, after I made application for my hemp permit. Now, the commercial banks and APSA, their reason for not funding me was, or giving me a loan, was that it is a high risk sector. The commercial banks will fund you if you want to do a mealie farm or if you want to do potatoes, because that has a track record of 150 years in South Africa. Cannabis and hemp is only 5 years old in South Africa, the legal industry. And for them, it is a high-risk sector, so they cannot and they're not prepared to fund or give loans out. I also applied with the Free State Development Corporation, and in 2022, they told me that their budget has been depleted. I submitted an application in 2023. I was once again told their budget has been depleted. So hemp is not something that they look upon favorably. The IDC, I had Zoom meetings with them. I also had a physical meeting at their offices in Sandton. They do not fund startups. They're also very cautious about the laws and the rules and the regulations at the moment. They're waiting on certain developments in government before they can consider funding the sector. They also ask for a 50% project owner contribution. So that what that means is if you apply for 40 million from them, you need to contribute 20 million from your side. And if I had the money, I would have started my project on a smaller scale instead of asking for that amount of money. Nedbank's answer was that hemp is not, like cannabis, is not a recognized crop in South Africa. So I've spoken to the director of plant protection, Julian Jafter. Agriculture is also trying to get hemp to be recognized as a crop, like millets and any sugar cane is recognized as crops. So because of that reason, Nedbank also declined my application. Land Bank, on the other hand, I had some good results with them. They came out, did an assessment of the farm. They were happy with the value of the farm I wanted to buy. But they declined me because the projected revenue that I had for the business was over 50 million a year. Now, I asked Land Bank to show me their internal documents for their policies that states they cannot fund a business that's going to generate more than 50 million a year. And they said they cannot send me that information. It's internal and it's for their eyes only. So, which made no sense to me that a business that's going to be that profitable, they were not prepared to help purchase the farm. I also was declined with the DTIC, specifically the Black Industrialist Scheme. They only do refunds or reimbursements. So what their reason for declining me was is that I need to spend the money to set up the operation, and once it's up and running, I can then apply to be refunded or reimbursed, and I just could not get access to that money. So these are the reasons that got given to me from all the funding institutions. I'll elaborate a bit more. But Desti in the Free State, I approached them for just under 400,000 rand for the environmental impact assessment I had to do on the farm. And this is from the Desti website, where it says that their funding scheme is targeted at startup enterprises. Clear and simple. And as I said, this is from their website. I was declined by DST, and I just want to play the audio recording, because I record all my telephone conversations, all my Zoom meetings, my MS Team meetings. I record all my interactions that I have with people.
She asked me to call you and
Okay, so when I was setting up my business and getting all my quotes for what I needed to buy the farm, the equipment, the seeds, and so forth, I tallied up what I needed for the business, and it went up to 79 million rand. Because I could not secure that money, I then revisited the business plan, knocked it down to 65, and then down to 41, and then down to 25 million. With all these revisions of my business plan and what I was prepared to do, eliminate buying the farm, eliminate the equipment, the warehouse, and looking at just the agro processing, still I could not secure the funding that I was looking for. Even though I had a very comprehensive business plan, my projections were checked out and audited, everything lined up, I had my permit, I had my import permit for the seeds. I had all documentation required for the business. Two of the funding institutions that I came close to securing the funding asked for a offtake agreement for the hemp product I wanted to produce, which is the isolate, and also they wanted an offtake agreement for the vegetables. The reason I wanted to cultivate a variety of vegetables on the farm, it's because hemp is a seasonal plant, and the 235 strong labor force that I was going to employ on the farm would have had to go home for a few months and not work during the winter period. But if I planted vegetables, I could have kept the labor force working throughout the year, generating a salary for themselves. So I've secured a client for the hemp in the USA. And I also secured a offtake agreement for the vegetables I was going to cultivate. But the third thing that was required by Land Bank and the National Empowerment Fund was a water license for the farm. I applied for a water license for the farm. I completed phase one. Phase two, water sanitation came out to the farm, a team of 13 people. They checked out the boreholes and where I wanted to build the mini dam wall, which was 4 by 12 meters, and where I was going to extract water from the Vaal River. They came to do that inspection and they were happy. And they sent me the requirements for phase 3, which is the final phase, which I had to submit all these analysis reports and so forth. When I approached the three consulting firms that could do these reports for me, the quote that I got was 886,000 rand. There I was, excuse the pun, but I was dead in the water. I could not secure this money from any of the funding houses or the commercial banks to secure the water license for Land Bank. And when they discovered the profitability of the business, because of that, they declined my application. So I just want to run you through all the funding institutions that I approached and my communications with them. I'll keep it brief because I know I've got 35 minutes. My first appointment was with the Gauteng Growth and Development Agency. She was a very informative young lady, very professional, and she pointed me in the direction of agriculture. Where I invited Mr. Anthony Moloto to come to the farm. And Anthony and his colleague came to the farm. I gave them a tour of what I wanted to do and I gave them a PowerPoint presentation about the business. And when I told them that I needed 79 million rand, this is an exact quote from Anthony saying that no South African government funding agency will fund that amount of money for a Free State project because of the Estina dairy farm scandal. I will not put my signature to it, even if the president himself tells me to do it. Now, the Estina dairy farm scandal that's related to the Gupta family, I'm sure everyone is aware of it. But this was my first meeting about funding, and I had to muster up the courage and the energy to continue after hearing this. I then approached the Free State Development Corporation because the farm is in the Free State. I applied for the funding, just under 400,000 rand for the environmental impact assessment, which I needed at the time. And the requirements and the documentation requirements that they sent me from the FTC was insane. It was the longest list of requirements from any of the funding agencies I've applied to. When I applied for my personal home loan, they needed my copy of my ID, my bank statements, my payslip, and I got four times the amount of money for a home loan. So that was just a bit ridiculous. Desti, as I said, you know, their website stated that they fund startups, but they declined me because I'm not operational, which just made no sense to me. The National Empowerment Fund, they gave me a comfort letter, but they wanted an offtake agreement for the vegetables. At the time, I struggled for 18 months to get an offtake agreement. I approached all the retailers, your Woolworths, Pick and Pay, ShopRite, Checkers, Spar, Boxer. All of them had the same answer or criteria. They wanted the farm to be up and running. They wanted to come and inspect my water quality, soil quality, compost, fertilizers that I was using, packaging facility, before they can consider giving me a letter of intent or an offtake agreement. So it was impossible for me to get it. When I dropped my funding request from 79 million to 25 million, NEF moved my application from the Free State office to the Gauteng office. And I submitted my application on a Sunday, the 12th of November. I got my acknowledgement letter on the 13th of November last year. I heard nothing from the NEF until I had to escalate it to their board members. And one of their board members then contacted the consultant who was assigned to my application, who I spoke to on Friday last week. And I've requested a Zoom meeting with him. And today is Wednesday. I still have not received the Zoom appointment to talk about my application. The IDC, as I said, they wanted a 50% project owner contribution, so I was dead in the water before I even started with them. But I could not come up with the money, 50%. That was just impossible. The DTIC, I met with Charles Manuel, who is the CEO of Invest South Africa. Yeah, my son actually met him when he was a diplomat in China. My son was studying in China. And my son passed Charles's business card to me, and I contacted him. And we spoke for 3 months on the phone. We had Zoom sessions with him and his deputy. And we had Zoom sessions. We had meetings. After 3 months, he introduced me to the Black Industrialist Scheme. And with my first interaction with them, they told me that they only do refunds. They do not fund upfront. They only reimburse or refund. And this is after I've been talking to Charles for 3 months. This was also a surprise that they never knew that I was a startup. CIFA, I spoke to Denise. They do not help applicants that have they only help applicants that have a clean credit record. And I do not have a clean credit record. I've got the defaults on my name, spanning back a couple of years. But because of that, I cannot be considered for funding at CIFA. I then reached out to the National Treasury. I sent an email to the Minister of National Treasury, just outright asking, because look, there's a lot of funding available for black farmers or new era farmers or emerging farmers, and that all refers to black farmers. And I sent the minister an email and I said, look, where has the funding been allocated for colored farmers? There has to be a funding platform or scheme that's been allocated specifically to colored farmers. He then put me on to, I got a call from Nazim Hendricks, a very professional person, understood my business plan, had a lot of questions, and he then put me on to the Jobs Fund. Once again, the Jobs Fund does matching funding. Now, it's the same as the IDC, it's just a different name. If the IDC, if you want 20 million from the Jobs Fund, you basically have to show that you've got 20 million in your bank account before they will help you with 20 million rand. I also approached the Vaal Special Economic Zone because the business was in the Vaal Triangle. The Vaal Special Economic Zone secured 40 billion rand investment from foreign investors for the region. I scheduled a meeting with them, a physical face-to-face meeting. And the day before the meeting, I got a call from the PA of the person I was meeting with to confirm that I'm coming to the meeting and if I needed the projector and so forth. And a half an hour after that call, the PA called me back, canceling the meeting, saying that the person I was meeting with was going to be busy. The only reason I can think of why my meeting, she called to confirm the meeting the day before, and a half an hour later to cancel, is because they figured out or realized that I was a colored individual because of my accent. And that meeting was canceled. 18 months later, I'm still not able to secure another meeting with them. Now, the Vaal Special Economic Zone secured 40 billion rand 3 years ago. But because of the internal fighting, the ANC appointed mayor of the region is not happy that the Vaal group of businessmen has too many Freds Front and DA members in it. So it has now become a political standoff, and this money has not been allocated to any businesses over the last 3 years. They also told me that I'm outside the Van der Bijl Vereniging circle, but it's not the case. The money has been allocated for all businesses on the Vaal River, and the farm I wanted to buy is on the Vaal River, bordering the river. The list goes on, and I can give you more examples, but I don't want to take up too much time. I just want to, as I said, I'm on two groups on WhatsApp with 261 members that has licenses and permits, and there are 48 coloreds on these two groups, but none of us have been supported financially to purchase farms, to purchase farming equipment, to purchase seeds, or anything related to our business plans. You know, the population is made up of 60 million South Africans, and there are 5.6 million colored people in South Africa. So if you look at the statistics of the funding institutions in South Africa that fund up to 10% of the applicants, at least 4 or 5 of us should have received funding from the South African government, but that has not happened. The money that I wanted to secure was to purchase a 285-hectare farm, and this is the Vaal River over here, so the farm is bordering the river. I wanted to build a 1,600 square meter warehouse on the farm. I wanted to buy 8.5 million rand extractor plant in China with a drying plant to dry the hemp biomass. The seeds I wanted to import from California, 250,000 seeds, 850,000 rand for these seeds. I wanted to build a small dam wall, 4 by 12 meters. I wanted to install 3 tanks on the farm to store water as well. Install 9 shipping containers to house the storage and R&D and so forth. Put in 235 hectares of drip irrigation on the farm. Employed 255, a labor force of 255 people from the area. Compost and fertilizer, I knocked it down to 65 million rand. But I've been unsuccessful with all the funding agencies and the commercial banks. Now, I've secured an offtake agreement with a client in the USA for my end product. Now, this client wants to buy 800 kilograms of isolate per month from him for life. And they are prepared to, the price we agreed upon was $620 per kilogram, which equates to 11,700 rand per kilogram. That's what makes it profitable. The only condition that they have is that they want me to send them samples. They want to test it in their labs to make sure that it is a purity of 99%. Now, the extractor plant that I want to buy in China guarantees a 99.7% purity. So with this offtake agreement that I have with a client in the US, and I've got all my ducks in a row, comprehensive business plan, audited projections for the income for the business. With all of this, I still cannot secure the money. This would have been a monthly revenue generation for my company of 9.5 million rand minimum per month. And yet I cannot secure the money. So as a colored person, I'm very sensitive to race equality or equality and diversity in funding or in banking institutions or in any of the sectors in South Africa. We can stretch it to employment and so forth. But the exemption or the isolation of colored people not being funded with ridiculous reasons for me being declined, this has to be addressed and looked at by government, by the different portfolio committees that has the clout to do something about it. But thank you very much for my time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sussman. We listened very attentively to your story, and I think I personally, as a chair, have a good sense of where you're coming from. I'm going to, before I open the floor, let's engage with all the presentations. So I want to immediately, without opening the floor, invite the second presentation. I think it was a doctor. I forget the name, just help me. Dr. Tandeka Kunene. Is that right?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay, the floor is yours. And again, I've given members carte blanche. I haven't put the time limits on, so I also won't do that for you. Please, the floor is yours, and please allow Dr. Kunene sharing rights.
Namtra, can you do that?
I'll just invite members' patience and indulgence, and please take notes of both presentations so then we can engage with both presentations. Thank you.
Yes, I've Doctor, you can proceed.
Greetings to everyone. My name is Tandeka Kunene. I'm the CEO of a company called House of M. House of M is 63% black owned. and 37% white owned. We started off as a 100% black owned company. When I was 14, I was the cannabis everything, and by the time I was 28, I decided to make cannabis my life. So I got a vision about how can.
Doctor.
Hello.
Sorry to disturb you. Maybe if you can switch off your video, because they've seen you, because you keep on cutting, we can't hear you. Yeah, you can put your presentation and then just switch off your video. Maybe it will be better.
Okay. Let me try that. Can you see my presentation?
Yes.
Can you see my presentation? Okay. Thank you so much for today. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can hear you.
Please just alert me what you're seeing. You're seeing a first page. Okay. I'm going to run very quickly. I also have come in the meeting with Mr. Gareth Prince because I asked him, myself and him, we represent the Rastafari community in the President's Pakisa Cannabis Steering Committee. He's a legal expert, and there's a I'm going to bring him in one or two places around possibilities. So the most important thing is that there's an international gold rush, and in terms of cannabis, and South African policymakers, including the Small Business Development Department, is trying hard to create a process of reforming the laws. Okay, opportunities. I'm going very fast here. The first opportunity is the growing. It takes 3 months to grow. There's the timeline. All those are pictures of small farmers. Most of them are in cooperatives, seed handlers in rural parts of South Africa. We, with the ARC, we've come up with 42 operational steps of how to... Yeah. Are you all okay?
I'm hearing someone.
Can I continue?
Just hold for me, Doctor. There is a African in a fund scout. Can I ask you to please mute? We are listening to presentation, so you are invited to observe, but please don't disrupt my meeting. Please proceed, Doctor.
Okay. And as you can see from all those is people who've worked with the ARC and Department of Agriculture, they've trained. So there's a lot of opportunities to grow hemp in 4 months. On the other side, there is the opportunity to grow in Nzamu also in 4 months, and we basically in South Africa know how to grow this. And then I just wanted to take you very quickly, you'll have this presentation, just to see the things that we've unearthed over the years. We have to do pre-gate processing, we have to clean the seed. All of these are opportunities. We have to do the curing of the flower. There's opportunity to extract the flower. If you look at this slide, it shows you the at the bottom all the industries that have got opportunities, Doctor, right now.
Dr. Kunene, may I invite you to take your time, relax, take us through this process. Not all of us are knowledgeable, and feel free, we have time. So as the chair, I want to encourage you, don't rush us, because we also want to learn and we want to understand. So take your time.
Okay, so when we talk, thank you so much, Mr. Chair, thank you so much. When we talk cannabis, we're talking both in Nzamu and hemp. And I have to talk in those terms because I've heard even up to presidents say cannabis and hemp. It's scientifically incorrect because cannabis includes hemp, and it includes Nzamu. At this moment, there's no term for Nzamu in English, which is high THC cannabis, so we'll call it Nzamu. And in cannabis, which is hemp and Nzamu, you have three main value chains: the seed value chain, the stalks value chain, and the leaves value chain. And in each of them, you would need a extraction of the oil, extraction of the fiber, and extraction of the medicines. And at the bottom, the green, you have all the raw materials, the main raw materials that come out. From the oil, you have the oils, and you have the, from the seed, you have the oil, and you have the seed cake. And then from the fiber, you have long fibers, short fibers, which are called tow, heads, which is the waste, and dust. All of it can be used. And from the it's not leaves, actually, it's the buds, the heads, the flower. You get a extraction, which is CBD and THC oils. And all those animal feed, food enrichment, cosmetics, supplements, biodiesel, beverages, textiles, biocomposites, automotives, packaging, non-woven, paper, food, insulation, construction, animal bedding, hydroponics, agriculture, nutraceuticals, roots, health teas, pharmaceuticals, all of them have indicated demand. So we are talking about demand-driven opportunities. That's the first thing that I wanted everyone to be aware of. Across 18 value chains. Okay, to show you the amount of work we've done in South Africa, we've even developed small scale decorticator. I'm focusing on the small, the rural areas, the poor. Yes, there's opportunity for the big guys, but that's not our focus for me today. If we can support the small businesses and the small farmers, then we are going to be able to create the jobs that we need to create. We've developed with the small business, with this social development, a way of doing what we call brown pads from the hemp, and you mix it or the cannabis, because both of them have got stalks, which means both of them have got a fiber. We do fiber pads, same as diapers, same as adult sanitary pads and adult pads for those who are sick. In South Africa right now, there's no one who's producing sanitary pads and diapers. They import it and distribute it. So there's a big opportunity because we've got a lot of women, we've got a lot of children, and we've got a lot of sick adults in South Africa. Then South Africa, as it is, has got everything that it needs to produce the pipeline. We did it with CSIR. We farmed as House of M. We acted a role of the aggregator. We contracted farmers to farm. We collected all their stocks. We extracted them through the existing SFS factory in Winterton. It's sitting, it was owned by the IDC. It was then sold at auction during COVID, so communities did not know about it. And it was sold to an Italian company. Government spent 170 million setting it up, and they sold it for 20 million to this Italian company who we've engaged, and they've said, okay, we don't really interested in the fiber part. We are interested in the in the warehousing, and they use the facility as a warehouse. We went to them this year, and they've agreed that we can enter into a relationship with them, because with that facility, once it's because the people of Bentonville stop them from using it, really. Because when IDC set it up, it said 25% will go to the community. So Bentonville has got a community trust, but they don't have the shares in this because they then sold it. But now the owners, the new owners have said, okay, we understand the socio-economic politics around it. We're willing to sit with you. Once you take the stocks there, you're able to cotinize it. You're able to do car parts with it. You're able to get Standerton and other milling plants to spin it. And then we've got a number of weaving. We did a number, all those fabrics there is what we produced in South Africa from our research harvest. And we did it with a small weaving company in Western Cape. But actually, NAFCOC has got a huge, has just bought a huge distressed a company called Governor Africa. Is the biggest textile producing company in the world, and they need about 20 to 30,000 hectares to do that. So we've got all that. NAFCOC has given us contracts and said, bring your black poor farmers, let them supply to me. I'm not interested in their politics. I'm interested somebody must work with them and give them the seed, give them the contract, collect everything, extract it in SFS, spin it in standard 10, and then bring me the haring. So NAVCOG wants the haring. Big opportunity there. 20,000 hectares for their R&D. Each hectare is 5 people minimum employing. There's a first big opportunity. Then, of course, these are the type of fabrics. All the one is the imported fabrics right now. Most of the South African fabrics are imported fabrics, whereas actually all the ones that are printed South African colors, we did ourselves. We've got the capacity in South Africa. And then a reality is that it's then bought by many SMEs, the skirts, the cushions. This bag in the middle here, it was the Fair Lady bag when we were doing research, and it featured, it was sold through the Fair Lady. It featured Fair Lady. They advertised it for 4 years, and it was made in Grahamstown by poor women. From scratch, they wove the thing themselves, and it costed 500,000 to the lady there. When we stopped aggregating, the whole thing fell apart because the women who are poor couldn't reach the markets. Okay, and then the other bag we produced in Gauteng, and we got something like 20,000 bags sold to New York every month. America, big, but you need an aggregator. So as I'm going around, I'm saying, what is the opportunity? What is the problem? In the rural, not reach the big markets unless there's a middleman who's an aggregator. I don't want to call them a middleman. Paper value chain, Sapi says he will buy that small little fibers at the corner there, and they sell it to banknotes, cigarettes, but the big guy would be Sapi, who take the fiber and convert it into a doable paper, like this type of paper. Wood, hemp, rice. Wood takes 20 years, hemp takes 4 months. Okay, then CSIR did a lot of work around plastic replacement and non-woven and automotives. They've got the way how to. Problem is, these particular people, we've got a company called Valid. They've got their 4 banks, and they've got 2 cell phone providers who have indicated that they'll buy a lot of plastic replacement, bioplastics. Now, they don't want to be bothered about the whole value chain of how to get the small farmers, the small extractors to supply that, but it's there. That's another big opportunity. Then this, we don't have offtake for it, but there is a 1,000 applications on non-woven, the technical. So if you had like SFS again, once you've extracted at SFS, you can make non-woven material, which then feed into biocomposites. The first application is the biocomposite panels, which can make MDF boards, which can make tiles, which can make ceilings, which can also make automotive panels. All of this we did here in South Africa with CSIR. So we actually know how to do it. On the corner here, in the green, on the right side, on the green, it's interesting. That was not made in South Africa. That was made in Indonesia. Now, that cost a tenth of the tin. It's hemp made in Indonesia in rural areas. It cost a tenth of the price of a tin. There with the light, it was made by Frame. Frame Fibers is the only existing of the Frame Textile Group, and they converted their fiber division, which extracted, into a insulation panel manufacturing. As you can see, it looks ugly. It don't look attractive, but they are exporting 100,000 worth of fiber per month, kilograms. There's a big opportunity. And their problem is, who's going to give me the fiber? So I've shown you 3 pipelines that have got fiber. It's the Frame Fibers. It's the Vital for the bioplastics. And it's the automotives. And it's the NAVCOG. All those 4 have said, give me the supply. Okay. And then this one is all from the internet, except in the right. This is what CSIR produced for Delta Automotives in Eastern Cape. But all of those is all cannabis-made plastics that the world is moving towards. Let us not miss that. What interesting, German, we sent German our waste, and they came with plastic replacement, all those foam caps, foam, you can use it, put it on the earth, it biodegrades within 90 days. Okay, then the waste after you've used a fiber is the hempcrete. All of that was made in South Africa. What I'm trying to show you, we've done all the research. Why are we not applying? Why are we not getting this waste from our people? The biggest challenge is they cannot do it themselves. They need an aggregator, because whether it's houses, whether it's automotives, they are looking for big, big, big numbers. And a small farmer, a small extractor is not able to do it. But on your left-hand side is this what we call a happy shack that we set up in Westville next to mansions. And we did a happy shack that we thought we'll sit with rastas and smoke in there. And it's cool in winter, and it's warm in summer. And when the big floods happened in KwaZulu-Natal, it never fell when mansions around it were collapsing. Compared to the middle is what was created in Western Cape. This in the left cost us 19,000 to do. It's a 4x4. And in the middle was Western Cape. They imported hempcrete and built a mansion for 3 million rand. While we've got all of this material in South Africa. The next pipeline is the seed pipeline. Okay, there's abundant seed in South Africa right now. The illegal market has given us a lot of seed. And I'll show you the communities that have got seed right now. We set up a small seed. We started with the fiber. A fiber costs 20 rand a kilo to sell. Then we discovered, as we are doing the research, there is the seed that comes in the tree. So in the seed, we set up a small-scale press. That press cost us 1 million rand to get. We got the funding from DTI. They've got this IPP program. We got 1 million. We brought a machine from Germany. We set up, you take the seed, you press, you get a seed cake, and you get oil. We got two main contracts, the one from Nature's Choice and one from Unilever. What happened, the problem there? Government took too long to give us the right to plant hemp seed here. Now that government has opened it, we've re-engaged Nature's Choice, we've re-engaged Unilever. They want a lot of oil for a hemp protein powder. So there's an opportunity. Then from there, you spin off all the nutraceuticals, okay? I'm talking SMMEs, what they could do, the hemp drink, the hemp peanut butter, the hemp cookies, the hemp, all of that, that is a spin-off. We don't have offtakes for that now. However, the water in every cannabis export that has happened, the infused water has been the biggest sell. Okay, because it's safe for children, it gives you energy, and everybody drinks water. And then we have cosmetics. All of these, except for the body shop one, were created in South Africa. So we've got SMEs that already have capacity to do this. What is their problem? Further SMEs, all of these are South African created one. Hand lotion, massage oil, face oil, sanitizer, lip balm. Why I'm presenting them is because I wanted to set myself as the producer of the raw materials, of the oil, of the fiber, of the medicine. Then a big one here is animal care. For whatever reason, South Africa imports a lot of the animal CBD products because all animals love cannabis. And South Africa herds, they spend a lot of money in their animals. And they're importing it right now. So where is the disconnect? Okay, then the big opportunity from Scania is the bio diesel. Just to go back, if you plant in communities that have got toxic land or lands that are eroded, Then you cultivate, you have oil, you have a flour and stocks. You take it to a reactor, bioreactor. We bought it. It's owned by Nexa government in South Africa. And you take it to a refinery. There's a big refinery that was set up in the Eastern Cape, Berlin, that can then produce biodiesel and glycerol, and then from the reactor we get ethanol and gasoline blends. All of what I've showed up to now exists in South Africa. The first people who gave us an offtake was Shell. They said, here's 60 million rand, 60 million liters worth of biodiesel delivered to us. We will set it up in four places, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, in their distribution places, Gauteng and Limpopo, and we will buy 60 million liters at 11 rand a liter. If you can do it, we will expand it to the rest of the provinces. We thought, wow, we started with beds. We did a biodiesel sample. It passed all except two of their tests, okay? Again, we're having problems because we are producing it with DTI, and they've got a small little production R&D in Limpopo, and but nobody is funding it, so we are doing it ourselves. Then, while we are working with Shell, boom, we got a call from Scania. They want 480 million. Now, I want us to take a break here and think. 480 million plus Shell 60 million plus AMSCO wanted like 24 million liters, 2 million per month for their military vehicles. We're talking something like 600 million liters of biodiesel. That needs 600,000 hectares. I just want us to take a breather there. We've got a demand for 600,000 hectares multiplied by five people minimum. Normally 10 people per hectare to harvest. We can do this. We've got all the capacity in South Africa. What do we need? We need an aggregator who will secure the seeds, because the biggest challenge is the seed. Oh, hold on. If you use local seed, you don't have a challenge. So what is the problem? We need government to allow us to use local seed, which already exists in South Africa. Local seed is about 15 rand a kilogram. At this moment, with the hemp permits, we are using international seeds, which are 600 rand per kilogram. It makes it not viable because 3 kilograms gives you 1 liter of seed. So there's a big opportunity with Shell, private sector. Actually, Petro SA has come in, AMSCO, and Scania, who have said, we will, here, we've got their letters of offtake. I've got them to me. But set it up. I can't set it up. I'm too small. I don't have that gutsy champion who'll tell a Department of Agriculture and the police that, hold on, all the seeds that will be harvested here, we are pressing them into hemp oil. Of course, the biggest problem of Eskom now is biodiesel. I have not included Eskom in this 600 million liters that the private sector has signed in. I want to tell you something else. Scania has said they will put some of the contract finance if we can sign it. But they want to see that government is for it. It's not going to be Tandega and her Rastas and her rebels and Gomas who are going to get into trouble and then the whole thing comes down. The other side is then the stocks, burn it to get bioethanol. Now, bioethanol, people like Virgin Airways, people like Mesa, they've all said they will buy it, but they want government to talk to them. So we need small business, we need DTI to help us secure these particular ones. And here I just showed you, we started with AMSCO, who said they will start us R&D, 15,000 army truck, one tank per army truck per week. Same thing. Okay, so we just need really, really a political buy-in here. And then The other opportunities is the flower, and the flower, the biggest one is what Hemp for Life was talking about, is the extraction. And there you need CO2, supercritical is the one that is most acceptable. Even there's a rosin or screw press is acceptable. And we've got a TUT, a NW, a Potchefstroom campus, and CSIR, they've got these machines. Why can, and then most of them are sitting at a 10% utility rate, they are gathering dust. Okay, then the big, big opportunity that the DTI commercial study has just come up and indicated is the distribution for responsible adult use. This obviously at this moment is illegal, but Parliament has just approved the bill. And the biggest problem that a constitutional court said was that allow people to use it and then find laws to guarantee the supply. Because at this moment, you're allowed to use it if you grow it at home. But the reality is that tobacco people are not growing it at home. Alcohol is legal. People are not growing it at home. So the opportunity here is for small-scale dispensers, small-scale stockfellers to be able to be empowered to distribute this. That automatically gives legal work to 900,000 farmers. That is a Fields of Green number. I am a scientist. I have not verified it, but I'm quoting them. Their study says there's 900,000 small farmers. Each of the farmers is growing 1 hectare and is employing 5 people. And 900,000 who are currently illegal, who are supplying 25% of the world cannabis. And the first thing that if President Ramaphosa was to ask me, what can I do to save myself right now? I would say, give them amnesty like how you gave us amnesty for the guns. Cannabis has killed a total of 0 people in the world, but the guns kill so many people, yet you gave us amnesty and allowed those who had illegal guns to bring it. Allow the illegal growers to come forward, to agree to be taxed, to agree to be formalized. Already, that is something like 475 million rand on tax that you can collect this April. They are harvesting right now. And then two, I want to tell you a story. I was in Colorado, Denver. When I was in Colorado, Denver, they have these licenses, and on one side, they doing it for like people like canopy growth, medicinal, and across the road is their responsible adult use. And the responsible adult use, the difference between medicine and responsible adult use is that they tax the responsible adult use like sin tax, like tobacco, gambling, alcohol. And then so it's more expensive, the gram there, than on medical, because medical has got no tax, they are sick, they need this. So in the medical, there was 10 people, there was one person every 10 minutes coming in, and they buy a lot, constant. So it's ticking, because they are sick. On the responsible adult use, there was 10 people every 1 minute. It's ticking crazy, because people just use the cannabis. So as government, as Department of Small Business Development, look at the people who are employing 5 people, legalize them, put the ganja smart puzzles and ganja stock fellas all over every municipality. You are talking about 278 municipalities, and look at every township. Every municipality has got how many townships? And puzzles are everywhere. Give them a distribution a box for them to distribute what already is being used in South Africa. That is local markets. They are already taking it. It's now legal. There's no appealing constitutional court. We must just find out how the poor can also participate. If we don't, we are going to see what's happening now. In Durban, there's 400 shops. Most of them are white. In Cape Town, there's 300 shops. All of them are white. Basically, cannabis is becoming a have community. Okay, because the have-nots who fought for this are being blocked. And yet, it's really, the cannabis private bill is the last law that allows that. Okay, so We went to the University of Northwest and the Center for Indigenous Knowledge Systems. We said, look, the Pondos, the vendors, the Pedi people in Loyola Mountains, the Swazi growers in Mpumalanga, the Dwandwe and Machonga of Bergville. We're talking about lots of communities that have been funding their people on cannabis. They are at a actually risk of being pushed out of this industry. We've got traditional healers, 360,000 of them, who use cannabis. We've got the Khoisan and the Rastafari who use it for their holy hair. In fact, Professor Ames in 1958 was given a right by government to set up small a sandbox, a legal sandbox, for small commercial distribution of cannabis legal. 1958, I ask you, what's our problem when our people need this? Is it because Professor Ames was white and we are a black and like the last gentleman or colored? Is that the problem? And of course, 2018, Prince is here. He'll answer some of the questions. Boom! We've allowed to use cannabis. It's no longer a thing. What are the challenges? Challenges is the poverty. Challenges is the poverty. The indigenous community of South Africa, who have been illegally processing, selling, exporting local cannabis, are at the danger of not entering. It's a socio-political threat. It's going to be a revolution because it's not like cannabis is a new industry. It's like cannabis is an existing industry. It's been existing for 1,000 years. But the people who've been traditionally snubbing cannabis are almost the ones who are riding it, and those who have been fighting for it are holding their heads, okay? So how are they holding their hands? The best thing is the permits. The hemp permit is easy to get, but it still needs 600 rand. It's easy to get. It no longer needs a fence, so it turns around within 6 weeks. Great. But hemp permit, problem of it is that it says you can only use registered seed, which means imported seed of 600 rand. But there's local seeds that are low THC. Why are we not using them? Then we've got the next problem. In KwaZulu-Natal alone, the government helped its people to get hemp permits. It's got 670 people who've got the hemp permits. Okay, so problem solved. In Bergville, those 670 are not include Bergville. Bergville has got 360 farmers. We said to them, let's work together, but show us you're committed. Pay for your own permit. They did. So the model we want to run is for the farmers to show they must put a skin in the game. 600 is very little. Okay? Then the problem is this commercial license. There's now 107 commercial licenses. Of the 107, only 7 are black. The other 100 are white. Big problem. Because it needs a site that is secured. Lots of documents. I had to hand in 3 files. Vetting. You need references in the value chain. They come like 5 times to inspect the site. And every time they inspect it, you must pay 5,800 or something like that, or 3,600 and their transport. You have to have an optic contract. You have to have your full organogram. You have to have an application fee of 21,800, and you must comply after that and enforce the compliance. Most people cannot afford that, because the site alone needs you to, the minimum site that the white companies have put, it's about the minimum one was a 5 million one, average one is 20 million, and myself, I operated from Dube Trade Port, which is owned by government, and my particular one, they spent 250 million setting up. Okay, and it cost me 278,000 a month to rent. I very few people can afford that. That's why I had to get a 37% owner in-house of them who had the resources. Okay, but generally, people like me cannot afford that. Therefore, it means we are turning our people into modern den slaves. That's what we saw in Lesotho. Or we are excluding the poor people. After all that, very stringent compliance. You have to have TACP, GSP, GLP, GMP, export and sales marketing, and you have to have a lab. There's 5 white labs in the country, no black lab. There's another opportunity, and all 5 of them give us different results, so there's no standardization. The good thing is that Department of Agriculture, in Gauteng, the Gauteng government has paid about 59 million in VUT, where the gentleman who spoke to me before me is, it's a VUT, it arrived end of last year, so there is a super lab that we can use. Even DSI has paid a CSIR for a super lab. So we've got two super labs in the country that our people can use it. And then every government in every province has got your SEDARA, your DUNI, they've got some capacity, because you cannot operate in the cannabis industry if you're not testing your product. Otherwise, we'll have unsafe products. If it's 36% THC, it's unsafe for human consumption. So we need to have that. Okay, so me, I got the license. So what? Back to zero. I've got a license. It's just another business startup, like Hemp for Life was saying. I am really at stage one after I have a license. And what do I have to do? I have to move to stage two, resource acquisition. And these are the success factors for you to be able to succeed in entrepreneurship. I did an applied maths process on entrepreneurship. Human capital, you have to have some intellectual property. You have to have finance. I think the gentleman, I'm not going to keep on moaning. I'm in the same position. Without the money, I was the first one to get the license. I was on TV. I then made a speech. Oh, vote the ANC. They have liberalized cannabis. And I'm still begging for a wiper money. Okay, it's a really serious problem. You have to have technology and innovation. You have to be reliance, compliance with regulatory. I am compliant. You have to have community partners. This is from Raymond Ackerman. If you do not partner with the communities, your business is not going to survive. Then you have to have a sustainable market. I summarize it into four for cannabis. Finance, license first, uptake, operational capacity, and finance. Without any of these four blocks, you cannot make it. Over and above that, the markets are now flooded with imported products. From where? Where the hell is this product coming from? Why are we smoking cannabis from America when we've got a 1,000-year industry in South Africa? And why is our government still, the tariffs of hemp and cannabis are still zero, whereas cotton is 20%, hemp is zero. So we have this flood of hemp. China is even bringing in cotton under the label hemp because they pay zero, whereas cotton is 20%. Urgently, Department of Small Business, close the tariffs. We are already producing hemp and cannabis, green cannabis in South Africa. Close it. Then human capital. Oh, let's train our people. Let's actually also acknowledge the experts that are there, IKS experts who are there. I make an example. Ras Prince here. Government right now is employing, and I'm not being horrible, and I'm saying it on his behalf, not him. Government right now is employing a white company called Cullinan to advise it on the law. But Prince, with his own money, took government and got a constitutional court. Yes, he did not get a deal, his articles, because he was arrested with ganja, so he was stopped. From, but he self-taught himself up to constitutional hill. Which other lawyers know that except him? But he's not getting in because he's got no track record. He's got no recognition of prior learning. Nobody recognizes what he has done. But Cullinan has got 100 years of establishment. So we go for them. So we have to, it's not only Prince, is the Amapondo who trained what is called master growers now. Master growers are getting 140,000 rand a month salary. They are in demand. But there's only 60 accredited master growers. Most of them, actually, I talked to all of them. 59 of them were trained by black garden boys, if one calls it that way. And the garden boys are still earning 2,500 a month. And the person I trained is earning 140,000 a month. There's a disjuncture. Let the universities accredit the trainers of the master growers. Research excellence we've got in South Africa, innovation system we've got, IKS, global intellectual property rights. Our IKS is not being is not being recognized, okay? Communication and marketing strategy, incentives and funding, and cooperating. Uptakes, oh, I went crazy. Top 13 uptakes that I have for my license into the port. I'm not talking about the Scania uptakes. I'm not talking about the NAVCOG uptakes. Those are hemp. This is high THC. My goodness, I'm going to be a billionaire. I've got something like together, I've got more than 4 billion in a rand of annual order. Oh my gosh, I've made it. I've made it. Okay. I've got them signed up, signed letters of intent. I've got the facility. I'm not talking House of M. I've got the facility in the best place in the world. My goodness, Agri Zone Block D, and I've got a business case that is noir. And I've got my strength, opportunities, weaknesses, everything is going for me. I've got my financial summary, it's everything with my quotation, everything, three quotations, I've done it. I spent a lot of time and I paid a lot of consultants to help me focus that, oh, in year 5, I will be making like $160,000 per annum in profit. Okay, I've got market, I've got a strong proposition, I've got a timely opportunity, I've got the right team. Oh my gosh, I failed to raise the funding. How much did I need? I started like the gentleman before. My business plan said I needed 150 million. I ended up reducing it to 50 million. I've got three hectares. So I'm going to do 1 hectare each, and then 1 hectare will give me. SIFA, I talked and talked and talked, and then they're too small. Small business, they said there's a cannabis sector support program. They made me present in many places. From the time it was Minister Zulu, I went everywhere with her, took pictures. Yeah, yeah, it's happening. No, man. ITC, they said I needed 50% at least. I don't have security. DTIC, they said I needed a sense of PE certificate. They're still going to come back to me. And that sense of PE certificate needs me to pay someone 5,000 rand for it. And this person looks like he's a hustler like me. So I'm scared now. NEF, no response. KZN, ADTIA, they've shortlisted me. But they told me they can only give me implements. And it's taking so long. My application went there June last year. KZN, Department of Agriculture, they've shortlisted me. They can only give me inputs. To the port, finally said, you know, we realize you paid 20 million rand worth of rent. We will come and renovate the facility in the new financial year, because I'm not raising money, because the people, I started with private sector, venture capitalists. They said, I cannot give you 150 million to renovate somebody else's facility. That's why now I've got to go to development finance. Recently now, after 4 years, I was the first one, 2019, 4 years. This March actually is the 5th year, sorry. My white partners have come to me and said, Tandeka, listen, shrink by 80%, end up at 12%, and we will put the money. But we don't want none of you blacks here, because you don't have good enough skill. You are not the right skin color. You don't understand how to run business. You know, and also you're going to bring a lot of poor people with you, because I've got this, let's take the poor with us, okay? And now, that was actually yesterday. And then when I got a reminder for the presentation, I was actually in tears saying, I'm going to, I said 100%, I shrunk to 63%. I'm going to end up at 12% when I've delivered the optics, I've delivered the facility, I've delivered the license. I'm an expert in the industry. What is happening? What is happening? So this is my appeal here to you, especially a small business. Then I also want to, why my white partners don't want me? Because I say, they are pushing me out. We've got a hostile takeover situation going in right now, okay? They say, we will put money. They've got the money, but we want all of you out, basically. In fact, the 12% they want to give me, they say, we'll give it to you, Tandeka, because we see you, the rest of the blacks, you are a better black, you know? You are a better black. And I say, but all all my other blacks have, we of this 20 million of rent, we've, because we're waiting for licenses. That's why we paid rent for 8 years, waiting for licenses to happen. We didn't want to be legal. But the other blacks have helped me. This 7 million we put in there, it comes from 37 of us who are poor. They said, no, 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 we recognize you, get rid of the rest, and you keep 12%. Do you know how much you're going to make? You're going to make 4 billion. 12% of 4 billion. You'll never touch money like that. Don't be ridiculous. Don't be difficult, black woman. Okay? Then I see, no, it's not only me. Actually, disadvantaged rural communities are not making it here. Okay? Worse than me. But if we have strategic, purposeful, targeted intervention that allows them to take ownership of the value adding, we can make it. Then, how can we make it? We've got, before I go to Sandbox, I want to come here. We have gone to all these communities and we've identified four value chains that we must do where there's opportunities for the black people right now. What is the seed? I'm telling you, the seed in South Africa costs 15 rand a kilo. The seed in France costs 600 rand a kilo. The seed in America for, that is for hemp. The seed in America for cannabis cost $1 cheapest per seed, one seed. And the seed for high THC in South Africa cost 40 rand per kilogram. It exists. Regulate the seed. Register it, profile the South African seed, like Durban poison. Durban poison is wanted all over the country, the world. It's the first, is the highest selling cultivar in the world for the last 27 years. But who owns it? Sensi Thread, who's stolen it from the Bergville community, because local in Bergville is Durban poison, and he has improved it and is selling it for $1 a seed. 1 kilogram has got 70,000 seeds. So we are talking big money here. The next one is the flour. I want to skip the flour a little bit and do the grain. Scania wants 480,000 rand. Get the people to produce with the local cannabis, hemp, biofuels. And then we have Nabokov and Galvano. For textiles, we've got China through the, what is it that we do, BRICS, who said they will buy all the fiber we can produce. And Carbon said, no, 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 hold on, hold on, hold on. 20,000 hectares saved for me, okay? Then we've got construction, we've got paper, we've got a valid with the plastic replacement. They will, between them, the fiber will, right now, to test it, they will buy 100,000 hectares. The grain, they will buy...
My apologies. I just want to get a sense of how many slides do you have left so that we can manage
time. I'm almost finished.
All right.
The flower, the biggest opportunity there is the responsible adult use and the African traditional medicine. Okay, because we are already using it. How do you do that? You do a sandboxing a definition where you allow, and Pagisa agreed that we can do sandboxing. We just need a champion, and I think small business can be the champion, where we allow the indigenous farmers to farm hemp using local seed that have got low THC. That will cover the NAPCOP fibers, and it will cover the skunk, and will protect our own seed. Then Northwest is ready. KwaZulu-Natal, Insangokhahlama is ready. They've got a lot, lots of farmers who are ready. In KwaZulu-Natal alone, about 1,500 have registered. They are ready to do it. Eastern Cape, very good example, is the Maginwe site. They've already sorted themselves out, but they've done a business plan. But they've got Nyandeni, Port St. John's, Lusikisiki, Eastern Cape Hemp Producers, Bizane, Port St. John's, IDZ, Automotive Sector, Biofuel in Berlin. All of these exist, they are ready. Mpumalanga, they are ready. Other provinces that are ready. The only provinces that we don't have is Northern Cape that has not said here is a project. So we need to do five activities. One, community engagement. What do they need? Two, capacity development. especially recognition of prior learning. Three, let's innovate and do research, including regulatory science and protection rights. We need farmer support. We need SMME development. All of these are in line with what you are doing. Then we operate together. The brown is the seed, the red is the fiber, and the blue is the flower. And we do a collective aggregation, because in one tree, you get all those three things. However, and of course, all those, they meet the 17 SDGs. What is really, really needed is a purposeful intervention that gives government a comfort that this can be legal through a sandbox, and that it can be controlled. And if you have an aggregation, and in each of those six provinces that I raised, they already have one area or the other that can be the aggregator hub. But it needs to be controlled from the top, so that small business, let's say when it was Minister Lindi Zulu, she was prepared with her team to sit with every province, and that small business champions this. The market is there. What we need is a letter that says we can do this, because nobody is prepared to talk to us without such a letter. And the sub-finance to assist our people to secure the seed and to play. But otherwise, to be honest, this 7.2 billion rand order does not need money. It needs political buy-in. So I appeal that this particular portfolio committee must sit with myself and Ras Prince and look at the proposal, or ask us to submit it formally. We've developed it. Nobody wants to talk to us. They are all playing chess. Go here. They are scared. But Pakisa has identified, we are sitting in the steering committee, we need a champion, like how Max Mamase was the champion in the first phase, and them to allow us to do the sandbox. Can you please allow me? I asked him for 2 minutes. Prince must say why the sandbox is legal, because everybody's going to tell you it's not legal, but it is. Professor Ames did it 1958, we did it 1999, we did it again 2009. It is legal to do a set aside where you say everybody wants to participate. And at this moment, we've got 1,500 farmers who have raised their hands. Let them come, let them register, let them chip in to producing, to be part of the production supplier chain, to supply NAFCOC, to supply Scania, to supply Village, and to figure out what else do we do with them. If you can allow him, because I'm not legal, but it's legal. So nobody must say, government must not say it's not legal, so we can't touch. The set aside under a sandbox is legal. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kunene. Very comprehensive presentation. A lot of issues, members, a lot of issues, a lot of things to process. Ras Prince, I welcome you also to make a submission. Our paths have crossed in the past, and it's nice to meet you again, and look forward to your presentation. Over to you, Ras Prince.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. And greetings to all of the members. I'm not having a physical presentation here. The big point and the elephant in the room is the fact that the Constitutional Court ordered that the legislature now make plans to incorporate the Dacha community. Let's call it for what it is, to incorporate the Dacha community into the family of communities within South Africa, and to ensure that adult South Africans have the right to use, possess, and cultivate cannabis. Now, the reality is that our parliament has now passed a cannabis for private purposes bill that unfortunately fell short of the one thing that they were set out to do, to tell South Africans where are we going to legally source cannabis. Now, that is a duty that rests on government. And as Dr. Kunene said, that task most probably falls on small business to a large extent, because it is the small family person or the small family unit that needs to be empowered in order to make a living of this industry. The people that was previously considered to be illegal and criminal. Because what the court judgment tells us that it is no longer a crime to use, possess, and cultivate cannabis. And as a matter of logic and common sense, you cannot have possession and use and cultivation without dealing. So there's a legal duty on the government to ensure that South African citizens can have a legal source of cannabis. Because the reality is not everybody can grow for themselves. Not everybody's got the skill, the time, or the place to do that. So it is government's responsibility. Now, we the cannabis community, we want to assist our government because the Concord obliged civil society to dance this dance with our government in order to ensure that we get this right. And we really in South Africa, we have the opportunity to develop a master plan that could be a leading light for the rest of the people in this world. We have that potential, and South Africa has, they have the people, we've got the climate, and we've got the infrastructural support. We need a government department to champion for the small person out there. And we are able to do that. And our law, as it stands currently, allows us to do that. There are provisions under the current Drugs Act that allows the Director General in the Departments of Health, as well as agriculture, to adopt a broad interpretation of what it means in order to empower our people. That's in essence what it means. Law is about interpretation, and government has a blank canvas to a large extent. There's nothing in law or in international law that prevents us from working with our people. And this is what government has set out to do. We're talking about sustainable development goals. We're talking about the economy, and Dacha in itself has the ability to feed into that. We need to understand that when we speak of Dacha, we simultaneously speak of hemp as well as medical cannabis. But when you speak of the others, you don't necessarily include Dacha. Whereas we are saying that our law compels us to adopt a holistic and integrated interpretation. Whereas a singular focus on hemp or a singular focus on medical cannabis is not what our constitution mandates. We are saying that we would simultaneously be able to do what medical cannabis does or to do what hemp does with our local climate-tested land-raised variety, the ones that our ancestors have been growing for hundreds of years. As a matter of fact, we haven't done any serious environmental impact assessments in terms of what hemp does to normal land-raised cannabis. And we cannot be quick to adopt foreign strains into our atmosphere without having tested them. And the same goes for medical cannabis. That's why from the outset we've said we can't allow the foreign or the Western voice to dominate South Africa's thinking and understanding around the plant. We have our own story to tell, and we have a local approach, an indigenous approach, and that is the one that we must cherish. The law is to serve us, the human beings. Human beings are not there to serve laws, and we must use laws to serve us. And we feel that there's a great opportunity for us to do that, and that's small business development can be that champion for the millions of people that needs this assistance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Rasprins, for that very important input. Okay, we're going to have our last presentation now before I open the floor to honorable members. We have representatives of SAFRA here. We wanted to get further government departments also here. So I think there is a need to get other entities, government entities, also to be part of this. But for now, I think we'll allow SAFRA to just make their presentation. I think the one issue that we as members of parliament want the presentation to cover is to ensure that you go through the challenges raised from members around the licensing process. Why is it so cumbersome? Why is it so onerous? And why is it that the net result of the licensing process has resulted that we perpetuate the economic challenges in our country? I think there was a figure about 107 successful applications and only 7 applications. So I want, when we engage in the presentation, and also maybe say what SAPRA can do to address the challenges that was raised by our two previous speakers. SAPRA, over to you.
Thank
Is
you
it
for
Dion?
Yes, good morning, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Welcome.
Thanks so much. I think I need to have my sharing enabled. I do have a presentation, and Jay, I do hope that the questions that you have asked may be able to be answered with the information that we are about to give you. We are giving you quite a broad understanding of where SAPRA is currently with regards to the current state of affairs, as well as the changes that we're making within the medicinal cannabis space. So as soon as that is enabled, that
you are enabled, please proceed.
Seems to be having some technical difficulties here. Can you see the presentation?
Okay, there we have it.
Okay, everybody, and thank you, Jay, for allowing us to present on the cannabis situation from a SAPRA perspective. So just some context of this and the Cannabis Master Plan. So in 2019, Cabinet made a decision in July of 2019 that South Africa needs a strategy for industrialization and commercialization of cannabis in order to increase the economic growth, create jobs and poverty alleviation. And the Minister of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development was appointed as the convener of this. And this then led to an interdepartmental committee, which was established to guide the development of the National Cannabis Master Plan. And there were various departments on the view, such as health, justice, Dalard, small business development, science, innovation, as well as state-owned entities like SAPRA, Agricultural Research Council, CSIR, we were all part of this. And the scope of the master plan includes both low THC as well as high THC. And just very briefly, this is the framework for the National Cannabis Master Plan, where it's got various pillars and various government departments, therefore form part of these pillars. So that's just an overview in terms of the broader cannabis picture from a government's perspective. Now, there are two authorities currently regulating the cannabis plot. And we need to make distinctions here, Chair, between the plant itself and the substances, and those distinctions need to happen as we go through this presentation. But for the purposes of the cannabis plant, we've got the Department of Agriculture, which is currently, through the Plant Improvement Act, looking at low THC cannabis for industrial purposes, and that limit is 0.2% of THC. That limit sits in the Medicines Act schedules and was transferred over to the regulations for the Plant Improvement Act. Then we've got SAPRA under the National Department of Health, which is looking after THC for medicinal purposes, as well as CBD for medicinal purposes. And this includes the cannabis plant material that exceeds the limit of 0.2% THC limit. So if the cannabis plant material has got more than 0.2% of THC, it is therefore treated as a scheduled substance under the Act because of the THC content, not necessarily the plant. Okay, so what is our current cannabis regulation when it comes to medicinal purposes cannabis? So under the Medicines Act, under Section 22C1B, That requires that manufacturers of scheduled substances such as THC and CBD are required to be licensed by SAHPRA. So THC, CBD, as well as the cannabinoids implicated by the schedules, so that means all other cannabinoids for medicinal purposes, requires a license to manufacture, and that includes cultivation currently. SAHPRA then conducts inspections according to good manufacturing practice, which includes the plants cultivated for medicinal purposes, and we include then the good agricultural and collection practices as a requirement of Annexure 7 of the PICS GMP guide. In South Africa adheres to the PICS, which is the Pharmaceutical Inspection Convention system. So that is the standard that we adhere to. Further in our A9, which are permits that are required for possessing THC during the cultivation or manufacturing process, because it is Schedule 6. And then we've got Section 22A11 permits, which are required for exporting THC-containing products. Now, the licenses that SAHPRA is currently giving, by default, are for export unless the company or the cultivator can demonstrate otherwise by means of an offtake agreement to a manufacturer in South Africa who is licensed by SAHPRA. But all in all, because there's no registered product that contains THC in South Africa, these products are destined for the export market. I'm sure why it's a bit slow. Sorry, G. How could fall? Okay. So what is the current scheduling of our cannabinoids? So we've got cannabidiol, which is CBD. It's listed in Schedule 4, which means it needs a prescription in you for use as a medicine, except in complementary medicines, which doesn't contain more than 600 milligrams of CBD per sales pack, and is a maximum daily dose of 20 milligrams of CBD. And the medicine, as a complementary medicine, must make general health enhancement, health maintenance, or relief of minor symptoms, low-risk claims. Then it would be considered a zero product and doesn't need a prescription. Or, if it's processed products that are made from the cannabis raw plant material intended for ingestion, containing 0.0075% or less of CBD, where only the naturally occurring quantity of cannabinoids found in the source material are contained in the product. That means that you cannot add anything to a product in order for it to be exempted from the schedule. In terms of THC, this is currently listed in Schedule 6. And the exception is that if you have raw plant material and processed products manufactured from such material intended for industrial purposes and not for human or animal ingestion, containing 0.2% or less of THC, that is not subject to the schedules, then it wouldn't be considered a Schedule 6 substance. And if you have products that are processed, made from cannabis, containing 0.001% or less of THC, that would then be not considered scheduled in terms of the Medicines Act. And then in line with the Constitutional Court judgment, when raw plant material of cannabis is cultivated, possessed, or consumed by an adult in private for personal consumption, the Medicines Act schedules will not be applicable to that raw material. So we've had numerous engagements with the presidency, who was working with the project management office within the presidency, was working with a lot of stakeholders, including SAHPRA and the Department of Health. And they were trying to find out how can we make this commodity commercially viable. And after many sort of interim measures that we were proposing and then ultimately ending up in the Cannabis Pakisa lab, there were some decisions that were made regarding regulatory reform, which is where SAHPRA comes in. So we participated in the Cannabis Pakisa Action Lab, which was hosted by Dallard as well as Operation Bulindela, and that was held last year in June. And we had government social partners, traditional leaders, organizations, industry experts, and legal experts, to name a few, not limited to that. And these were all the attendees that came. And there were three work streams in this program, which was enabling legislative and regulatory reform, enabling innovation for investment, and enabling inclusive business growth. And the important outcomes were actions identified by responsible departments, and there were agreed foundational policy principles for cannabis, which would then inform the Cannabis Master Plan. The actions that were identified by SAPRA was to do a schedule amendment to enable DALR to regulate the cultivation of all cannabis. Currently, the way the Medicines Act schedules are and our guidelines is that SAPRA, for medicinal purposes, is looking after everything from cultivation right up until a bulk product or a finished product as medicines. But one of the actions was to do a schedule amendment to give the cultivation of all cannabis plant to DALR, right? And that would then enable the Minister of Agriculture to determine the limit. Currently, and I'm sure it was when you looked at the previous schedules, we had a 0.2% limit for raw cannabis plant material for THC. That would then, that limit, which is being determined now by SAPRA and the DOH, the decision to determine that limit would then move over to the Minister of Agriculture under the Plant Improvement Act. The other action would also be to enable SAPRA within this schedule amendment to have oversight over cannabis cultivated for medicinal purposes only, including the cultivation for the purposes of active pharmaceutical ingredients. However, the success of this amendment would be subject to the Department of Justice's legislation overcoming the cannabis inscription in the Drugs and Drugs Trafficking Act schedule, because currently it is in there. Now, one of the other actions identified for SAPRA would be the revision of the licensing framework, which would be based on DALR creating a good agricultural practice standard. And this would then enable farmers to cultivate under good agricultural practice, which is the minimum requirement for plants for medicinal purpose. And therefore enable SAPRA to only license activities of cutting, dyeing, and extraction under GMP requirements. Now, what GMP requires is that plants that go into medicines, the plant must be cultivated from cultivation right up until harvesting under good agricultural practice conditions. And the good agricultural practice conditions can be a national standard, which aligns with the World Health Organization or EU standards for good agricultural practice. In South Africa, we do not have that standard. So SAPRA then had to look after from cultivation up until harvesting, cutting, drying, and the rest of the processing steps. What the action from the PAKISA is for DALR to then create a good agricultural practice standard under which all cannabis will be cultivated under lesser requirements than the GMP standards that we currently have. And then SAPRA will be able to take that, or the manufacturer of a medicine will be able to take that GAP product and then further manipulate it under GMP conditions under a license from SAPRA. So where are we currently with the actions from the Cannabis PAKISA? So SAPRA has proposed amendments to the Schedule 6 of the Medicines Act with regards to THC. And the schedules are currently out for comment as required by the Minister of Health or requested by the Minister of Health. This was published on the 15th of January 2024 for a two-month comment period. So, Archie, I just want to take you through the comparison of the changes so that everybody understands the changes that we made. I just want us to concentrate on the comment because that's basically the changes, but I'll read through the proposed schedule amendments. The schedules proposed now THC, which is tetrahydrocannabinol, will be Schedule 6, except in raw cannabis plant material cultivated and possessed in accordance with a permit issued in terms of the Plant Improvement Act, and processed products manufactured from such material intended for agricultural or industrial purposes, including the manufacture of consumer items or products which have no pharmacological action or medicinal purpose. So what this means now is that THC will be Schedule 6 unless it is cultivated under a permit from Department of Agriculture, and that is now all cannabis plant material, right? And then it also now, the inscription also now includes agricultural purposes, so that we didn't just have the industrial purposes aspect. We actually now made it more clear to say not only industrial, but also agricultural purposes will be exempted. And then what we added was more clarity in terms of what are the sort of items that we will be excluding. So now we've included manufacture of consumer items or products which have no pharmacological action or medicinal purpose, just to clarify what is not going to be exempt, what is going to be exempted from the schedules. The other change that we made was the deletion of the processed products inscription. And what this allows now is for other product regulators to impose regulations and limits, for example, on foodstuffs, cosmetics, and cultural feeds. So this, the removal of the processed products inscription, thereby allows other products to be exempted, but then those would be controlled by other regulators and not SAHPRA and the Department of Health. Then the next one that's in there was the one that we had previously, which was in line with the Constitutional Court judgment, which allows private use, position for private use. Now, the amendments to the schedules, right, had some contingencies, because even though we would be giving or allowing the regulation now by removing certain limiting inscriptions, South Africa still has a duty to fulfill its obligations in terms of the 1961 Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. So in order for this to happen, because the cannabis would now be controlled by DALR, we needed to communicate certain contingencies that these inscriptions would need to have in order for our inscription in the schedules to be successful. And these contingencies were communicated to the Minister of Health, the DG of DALR, and the DG of Just Constitutional Development. So the contingencies are that DALR needs to develop a good agricultural practice standard so that they can then certify the cannabis that is made by him, by permit holders under the Plant Improvement Act, that manufacturers of medicines can now take this cannabis and manufactured under GMP conditions. The designation in terms of the Plant Improvement Act of appropriate limits for raw cannabis plant material to be considered low THC must be made by the Department of Agriculture. Then in the permits issued by Department of Agriculture in terms of the Plant Improvement Act, they need to make in those permits certain conditions that the plants must be made under certain conditions, and which channels this cannabis cultivated can be going into, and it must include the mention that anybody who then takes this would require a manufacturing license from SAHPRA for making medicines out of the plant. DALR would need to, with SAHPRA, work out a mechanism for the reporting of cannabis to the INCB. The Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill would need a clear indication of how non-medical adult use cannabis with higher THC content than provided for low THC cannabis would be regulated. And this step would also then entail the subsequent removal of the mention of cannabis in the schedules to the Drugs and Drug Trafficking Act. Two important contingencies for products that are made out of the plant is that appropriate measures need to be taken by the National Department of Health in terms of the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectants Act to regulate cannabis-derived products intended for human ingestion or other human use other than medicinal purposes, because that would then be SAHPRA. Then appropriate measures also need to be taken by DALR in terms of the Fertilizers, Farm Feeds, Agricultural Remedies and Stock Remedies Act to regulate cannabis-derived products intended for human ingestion or other animal use other than for medicinal purposes. In terms of the way forward, after the schedules come back with the comments, we will then work towards the finalization of those amendments, and we would then engage with stakeholders identified in the contingencies, which we've already started doing, to ensure implementation of the items identified. Now, in terms of support for the cannabis industry, especially in the medicinal cannabis industry, we know that some applicants need some sort of proof that they've applied for a license from SAHPRA, and we have implemented a mechanism where they can apply for a status letter with SAHPRA. What they do with that status letter is up to them, whether they want to take it to the funders or whatever. We do not tell them what the status letter is for. But we do allow applicants to ask us for a status letter of the license application to show where they are within the license application. SAHPRA also provides leniency compared to the other licenses that we issue in terms of time for applicants to meet requirements. We often have to go out maybe once or twice, maybe three times to inspect clients. We inspect them, we give them what their deficiencies are, and we may need to do a verification inspection. And we understand that these things take time. So we don't just reject applications for cannabis cultivation license holders. We do give them time. Some challenges that we've had in the medicinal cannabis space is the diversion of product into the illicit market, and there may be various reasons for that. Another challenge are applicants meeting requirements for medicinal cannabis. Because it is a medicine, it does have far stricter requirements than the industrial use of the cannabis plant. And then also in South Africa, we don't have any medicines that are registered containing THC and CBD that would facilitate a medicine sort of economy where we would have prescribing of finished products containing THC and CBD for medicinal use as higher schedules such as Schedule 4 and Schedule 6. Nobody has, we don't have any medicines that are registered by local applicants in South Africa according to. One positive success is that we do have South African license holders that have and still are exporting medicinal cannabis legally to importing countries using their license, GMP certificates that we actually give to them, as well as permits that we issue to them to export not only raw material, bulk cannabis, but also some manufacturers are licensed in South Africa to extract and make finished product that is exported out of the country. And with that, Chair, I submit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Puven. A lot of legalese. I was struggling to follow, and I'm sure members will engage with the presentations. Okay, so colleagues, we had 3 plus 1 input, 4 inputs. Very comprehensive. I think I'm not going to try to summarize now, but I'm going to open the floor. So how we do things in the meeting is that we invite honorable members from the different political parties to engage in any or make comments or make submissions or on any topics, and then we also have another round of inputs from the presenters. So I will now invite members to put up hands. Let me have an indication or order of hands. Okay, Honorable de Villiers, you're number one. Let's get the order going. Okay. Members, are you there? I'm inviting hands, so can I get a show of hands? There was a lot of information to digest, so let's give Honorable de Villiers while other members are still thinking. Honorable de Villiers? I saw another hand. Honorable Muller, you next. Honorable de Villiers.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank all the presenters it really was a vast amount of information. It spans over different industries. It spans over different challenges and sizes. And it's quite clear, and I think a lot of presenters touched on it, that part of the reason why this is such an important topic is that this is a new challenge. It's a new industry. We need to, you know, and there's not a lot of established support or history on how the industry should engage with the government, how the public should engage with them. So it has to be acknowledged that with all of this, there seems to be a lot of frustration as well. I could see that a lot of the presenters felt urgency. They felt frustration. And I can understand why, because I can understand how it must, or I can just imagine how it must feel when you open newspapers and you see that everybody is talking about the potential of the industry and how much, you know, how much could be made from it. And then if you invest your personal time and effort into all of these different ideas, which we've seen, wonderful ideas, literally, I mean, these are pioneers. They are the start of it all. And then to run into road stops, specifically with financing and getting the business's finances, I can see the frustration, and I 100% empathize with it and understand it. I can also understand, you know, from the other side, the difficulty that it must be for financiers, whether it is government or private financiers such as banks, that it is difficult to finance something which you don't understand yet. And as we all know, people who lend, lenders, are conservative by nature, and you know, they tend to want to make sure that it's a home run. You know, they don't operate like speculators, if I can call it that. So we have this hurdle to overcome, where you have all of these wonderful entrepreneurs who are ready to go, but you also have the finance institutions and the government framework, which is just not adapted yet to accommodate these new sets of engineers, entrepreneurs. And thinking about all of this, you know, if we step aside and we say, well, what's our role? What's the role of the government in all this? We need to, in my mind, look at what is best practice around the world at the moment. So what are the countries, and I don't know the answer to this because this is completely outside of my own speciality fields as well, or my knowledge, but what are the countries abroad who have created, governments abroad, who have created legislation or legislative climates where cannabis or hemp or any of the related industries are beginning to thrive, and where people are absolutely building these new industries, because we need to find out what is best practice and where is the established history on which we can then pull to bring it back to South Africa and then to empower these entrepreneurs. We can drill down into some more of the other ideas, but I think our place as a committee is to say, you know, how do we create business development opportunities from a government perspective? And I think that would, in my mind, that is the most sensible thing to do, is perhaps a joint investigation with the Department of Agriculture. This seems to be very related. It seems to me that there's a very big shared interest between agriculture and small business development, and perhaps even trade and industry. I must say I'm quite surprised by the amounts that people are talking about, that some of the presenters have mentioned. I mean, these are not, I mean, we used to dealing with entrepreneurs who are applying for R1 million or R2 million. I mean, the amounts that were mentioned in these presentations are massive. I mean, it is huge capital investment businesses, which I 100% can understand, because if you talk to any successful farmer, that's the type of amounts that they need to buy a farm, get the equipment, get all of the infrastructure invested. So I believe the amounts, but they are scary big, I must say. And I can understand that the size of those amounts must also be a detriment to getting financing. Not only the unknown factors of the industry, but also the fact that this is a very capital intensive, that some of these enterprises seem to be very capital intensive. So all of that must be overcome. And my input would be that as a government, our place is to try and find best practice and implement best practice. And that's what I submit from our side. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable de Valles, for your inputs, very thoughtful inputs. I've recognized Honorable Muller and then Honorable Hendricks.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. I think I would also like to kind of say in the same vein as Honorable de Villiers. Firstly, thank you very much for the presentations, but also for me, so in a similar vein as best practice, I think understanding the different criteria from the different kind of countries around who's done this, but specifically on the funding implementations and challenges that other countries have overcome and experienced and how we could learn from that. I think also perhaps listening to the presentation from SAPRA on the master plan, was there any kind of talk around a pilot project or an incubator model? Because if you listen to the presentation, there's so many across the different streams for small businesses and for new industries. How do we kind of consolidate and build an incubator model where we kind of supporting and helping small businesses in the different streams? And then maybe just a question for SAPRA, how long is the licensing process? So you issue them kind of a certificate, but then from the start of the application to the kind of issuing of the certificate, just a question on how long that is, and is there a significant cost? I think earlier on we heard it's quite significant, but I think that would be. And then maybe, Chair, just as a new member, have we had kind of funding institutions across, because you've heard the experience of the presenters coming to talk about how we can streamline and make it better. And if we've not had that, perhaps that's just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Muller. Again, good submissions. Honorable Hendricks, your turn.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And the first opportunity I have to congratulate you. I'm being the chair of the portfolio committee in these last few weeks. Honorable Chair, as a Muslim, I cannot support anything to promote dacha and hemp and whatever you call it. So as a matter of faith, I want it to be noted that we cannot participate or promote anything to do with dacha and hemp. We do understand that there are some medical benefits. There are some economic opportunities, so we won't stand in the way of that. But yet, it must be noted that my constituency cannot in any way be seen to participate, to be involved in this new industry, which I have said has economic opportunities and even medical benefits. So I want that to be on the record, because I don't want that to be a blot on my term, my five-year term in Parliament. Secondly, setting that aside, it is Al-Jamar's view that this industry has been captured by white monopoly capital, and that this industry will largely benefit the captains of industry, and that the barriers to entry for small businesses, and this is a portfolio committee for small businesses, is unimaginable. It is impossible for any small business to get a foothold in this market. It will forever and forever, amen, and you must note that, be controlled by whites. They have carefully manipulated the opportunities for their benefit. And I don't want to be involved with a small business portfolio committee that will assist white domination in this industry. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hendricks. I now recognize Honorable Apples and Honorable Becky Sithulu. Honorable April first.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the presentations. I think it was quite elaborate. I'm not going to be opening my camera. I hope that is okay. It was quite elaborate, I think. Chairperson, I want to make some observations. Number one, I must say that, you know, I don't agree with the previous speaker when he, on the basis of faith, brings an argument that it's a vote or a no vote. You know, there's some people who would argue that as much as he would argue for peanuts to be in the Eastern Cape, that there's some people that's allergic to peanuts and can say that, why would you argue for peanuts? I'm not going to go into that, but safe to say that we all have rights to represent our constituencies that has elected us. I have heard the runaround that Hemp for Life has been given. I think the gentleman's name is Ben. He has been quite elaborate in terms of how he has been running around to sustain the kind of cost that has gone into it. He has also made known that the criteria that is being used in order to give assistance would be that to say that you must be credit your own personal credit profile, forgetting that the business is a legal entity on its own. One is worried that there are many small enterprises outside there who's been left outside of doing meaningful business, because we come from a past where we never received any kind of assistance from the state. That's one thing that I think we must be looking into. But to stay on the vein of way is, it seems like I didn't appreciate when the conversation became politicized in that ANC and DA and all of that, because when we're looking at small businesses, we never look at them what their political party affiliations are, and we always look at businesses as South African-owned businesses that we support. So I didn't appreciate that part of his presentation. He did say that he records everything. I want him to take this on record, that as the African National Congress, we are a non-racial, a non-sexist movement that supports anyone in the interest of the betterment of South Africa. So please be very useful with your voters here when you come for it. Dr. Tandeka, you have really brought about a light in terms of your knowledgeability and the years of experience that you have. And I think Ben can learn quite a lot from you. I would suggest that he reaches out to you, because there's a couple of opportunities that you have identified that I think he would find benefit from. It's important that we, on platforms like this, find common ground where we could work together and where we could use the networks that we've got. But I think there's a big responsibility on us as elected officials, elected members of parliament, to ensure that the loopholes that have been identified in this discussion between us and the people, that we in the next term look at these things and make sure that the ease of doing business with the state and the ease of getting access to funding is something that we need to look at more importantly and intensively. So, Chairperson, mine is not to make a huge contribution. I want to say to the presenters that we've taken note of what you said. We've taken note of what you brought to the table, and you can be rest assured that we are going to ensure that what we leave in our legacy reports and what we will start at work, should we come back, will be these things, and we'll take it to cognizance and carry it with us until we see a South Africa that is non-discriminatory and participatory and helpful to better the lives of everyone. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable April. Ntabezita, it's your chance.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not much, but what I would like to know is that why the license of the cannabis is taking too long, even you submit all these things which are according to the according to the law, you submitted everything sometimes. I know of some other people who applied, who gave all the details, because this thing is it seems as if it's a long process, because you need to have a doctor, especially when you want to plant cannabis. You must have a doctor who can examine those things accordingly. Secondly, you must have a place where you are going to sell, and then even the letter of stating that if you want to sell, we must have a person who you can plant and sell to him or her. Also, it's a lot of processes, and why so much? If we want to uplift the people, let's take for argument's sake those people who are living in a rural areas, they haven't got all those expertise. How can the department can make it little bit less? And then even the equipment itself is very expensive, because we are talking in terms of if you want to have a tunnel for it where you are going to plant, you must have a computerized watering that plant. It's a lot. You spend a lot before you can enter in this. How can the government can assist those people? And secondly, how are we going to stop those fly-by-nights? Because there are certain companies now who are around the areas, especially in KZN. There are companies who are coming from Joburg. They are coming there to teach the people, how are you going to plan, how can you plan this? And then they are getting a lot of money, the consultant fees, to them. Also, those you normally apply to them, and then they run away sometimes with your money. I know of certain people who lost money. They used to tell you to apply for the license. Give them 80,000 before they can start, and then after that you can't even see where they are. All those things, so that the government sometimes can help us on those things, so that the people mustn't lose money like that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. The Whip, Honourable Chloe Lang.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to request to switch off my cameras. I'm also preparing to go to the House. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation and further indicate that I want to agree with the previous speakers, especially Honorable Hendricks, because I wanted to say the raised concern. My concern, Chair, is I was also looking at the benefit. How is it cannabis, especially the permits, going to benefit the small businesses that are waiting for a very long time? But the problem is, it's like we're talking about something that is already privatized and benefiting a certain individual. I went to one of the slides that talked about the permit holder. It says in terms of the support, the colored 48, it says zero. And there is also discrimination in some slides of the when you look at the cannabis and the hemp holder as far as the license permit is concerned. How do you say South African population is 60,000 I want to check if it's those who have the permits. But how do you separate the colored community from the South African population? Because Tina, as government, we don't even isolate each other. When we are talking about the composition, we are talking about South African, including the colored and black Africans. So there is a slide where it talks much of a discrimination a little bit, and it raised a lot of eyebrows. But secondly, Chair, I want to check the role of agriculture. Because when you start to speak about planting and agro-processing, the agriculture must be part. So my proposal or my view is that the presentation is fine for now, but I think for us to get to the gist of the matter, the Agricultural Portfolio Committee must also partake of this presentation, because most of the issues do affect the agriculture. And secondly, I don't understand, especially in terms of the first presenter, is it Mr. Ben, who was presenting firstly, as to how we can convince us that in terms of these numbers of the 60,000 license holders, how do you divide them according to the provinces? Do they have, because I heard him presenting, do they have the allocation as per provinces? And how are you going to make sure that if as government, when we find this, because it looks like it's an individual or a, I don't want to say a cartel, some sort of, but a group of few people who are benefiting from it. But how do we make sure that we are not working against what the government, because the government obviously doesn't want to hear anything that is illegal. That is the first thing. How do we avoid people to do illegal things as far as this cannabis and the herbs are concerned? Secondly, how do we make sure that we bring the two departments together so that the agriculture must be part of this, so that when we do planting and the agro-processing, all the departments are part of this? But my proposal will be, I think we need to go back. The presentation is before us. We can be allowed space as the portfolio committee, especially the politician, given the responsibility to play oversight, discuss it amongst ourselves, because other issues, it will be like we are attacking the presenters of the issues, but there are a lot of issues and some of them, we can't even raise them in their presence. I think if it's us, we can be able to deliberate more and come up with the way forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Work. Colleagues, what I'll do before I give the presenters a response to have a second bite, I will now take my chairperson's hat off and just also speak as a member and just give you my initial observations. So, colleagues, the reason why we have this presentation is because cannabis, hemp, dacha, tsango, it's not only topical, it is contextual and very rich history. It is linked to the resistance of our people. And I think Gareth Prince spoke to it. There was a constitutional court. A lot of our people use, consume, grow cannabis. And in the past, just like apartheid and slavery, the cannabis and hemp industry was decimated because it was mainly black in favor of tobacco and cotton. If you look at the history, both in America and of the our erstwhile colonizers, that happened. So for a long time, just like the taxi industry, formal economic sector of your traditional black communities. And yes, this government took a while to implement the constitutional requirements, but now we have a legislation framework which has decriminalized cannabis and said we must commercialize it to the benefit of all its people. So we're at that stage now. And I think whilst we acknowledge it took a long while to get where we are, any challenges. And I want to applaud the four presenters that spoke here. And us as legislators, we need to be wary to what's happening out there, because many young people that have been picked up because of possession of cannabis, whether you're a Rasta or just a youth on the Cape Flats, you have now a criminal record, because it was a criminal offense to have cannabis. And I think what we need to do, we need to destigmatize the use of cannabis, whether it's for recreational or for medicinal or for religious purpose. The constitutional framework allows us as adults to use it without prosecution. So I think the one issue that we need to do, there's different aspects of it, but the one aspect that we need to do is get the Department of Justice to see how are we ensuring that those youngsters that have these criminal records are expunged. That's one issue that I certainly feel passionate about that we need to follow up. I also contextually, I feel for Mr. Sussman, because Mr. Sussman is a representative of a South African. Yes, he's colored. Yes, he's a man, but he's first of all a South African. And so our state must work for all of us. Our states, our entities, our funding agencies must work for all of us. So if you look at the journey that Mr. Sussman has taken, and normally we don't listen to individual complaints. We normally get representatives. But I think Mr. Sussman is a representative of a constituency that feels alienated or marginalized or not being catered for. And I think that is important. You know, race, culture, and identity politics is still big in South Africa. And I'm sure it's going to be big now going towards the elections. Our job is to ensure that where there has been oversight, where there has been failure, we need to see how we can correct or remedy the situation. So I want to ask our officials from the Portfolio Committee to actually follow up Mr. Sussman's case separately, because he has approached many, many different government entities, and many, many government entities have failed him or have not provided him with opportunities. And so I think there is lessons to be learned for you, Mr. Sussman, around maybe starting a little bit smaller, maybe being part of a broader cooperative or broader movement. And I think the recommendation or suggestion that Mr. April has made about collaborating with Dr. Kuneni and her association is useful, because I think the first principle is that we need to ensure that we move away from being marginalized, but we also move away from being the victim. And I think for me, that's a key thing. We need to ensure that there's proper oversight, and we need to ensure that there's administrative justice if there has been oversight. So I'm saying that let us allow Mr. Sussman's issue to be followed up separately. I want to move to the presentation of Dr. Kunene and say that there is a treasure trove of information here, and also recommendations. I want our researchers, parliamentary researchers, to take everything that was presented. Unfortunately, we didn't get the presentation beforehand, but I think there's great recommendations coming here. I mean, simple thing like seed. It makes sense for us to protect our industries. If we're saying we want to create millions of jobs, why can't we put tariffs on hemp and cannabis imports? It's a no-brainer. So I think that one we should take to our colleagues in DTI and at the trade that's dealing with trade, and implement that. It's a good suggestion. I think that one is a concrete one. Simply like seed. Why is it that we have to use foreign seed? And so the question I want to ask to SAPRA, you know, I think I got lost in the legalese of the SAPRA presentation, but it didn't sufficiently answer the question of how is it going to ensure that the licensing process is not an inhibitor to continue perpetuating economic exclusion of the majority of black people. You know, black people... It's an industry that there's millions of gogos that grow dacha in our rural areas. They are still part of informality and illegal. Now that the legislation is there, and yes, there is loopholes, but the legislation is there. How do we ensure that we formalize them? How do we ensure that we regulate them? How do we ensure that they pay tax? And how do we ensure that it's done for both commercial purposes, but at the same time benefits the creation of jobs? And I think for me, I note your hand, but let me just ask you to put your hand down. I will give all the presenters an opportunity. I don't want my train of thought to be lost. Mr. Sussman? So I think for me, what we need to do is to process all of the recommendations that came out of the House of Hemp presentation. Clearly for me, there's a lot of research, a lot of processes, and our industry, our cannabis, our dacha, our however you want to call it, they are ready, and we as government must also be ready to ensure that the green economy is growing, but to also ensure that the small person also benefits. We can't have our multinational come in, make big investments and take all the profits out, and we just become subcontractors and we just grow and we don't get the benefits. So I think this department must be the champion. And I want to encourage the representatives of the department and of the ministry to see how they can come give us feedback on the cannabis support program that there is from the department. I heard something about 300 cannabis growers in Western Cape and 800 in KZN. And so I think whilst we don't want to discriminate, we need to ensure that there also is broad-based black economic empowerment for small growers, for small cooperatives, for them to benefit in the process. And there's a whole value chain. And I think what we need to do is see what we can do. I think you call it aggregators, targeted inventions to help small business, black SMMEs around these aggregators. So I think the one thing is the finance, access to finance. Look, I think we mustn't be under any illusion that sometimes our banks are racist and profile our people. We've just seen now that black people generally are charged more for interest on their houses than or cars than white people. There was a competition commission report came out. So that is a practice. We can't allow government entities, we can't allow development agents to perpetuate this. And so we must ensure, it's part of our responsibility to ensure that that access to finance is affordable. We also need to acknowledge that there's not a lot of finance to go around. And so access must be affordable to everybody. Everybody must be seen to have access to affordable finance. And that's something that we need to also see how we can bring the banks in place. I think you spoke about the tariff, and I think that was also raised. There's a lot of exciting things about biodiesel and accreditation of Amapondo people. I mean, that point just resonated with me. Why is it that black garden boys, like you put it, Doc, must train white master growers and they then get the money? Why can't we get? Why can't we upskill? Why can't we do a recognition of prior learning? So again, that is a very good suggestion. And I think here we need to also look at how we get the sector skills plans and the CETAs in to see how we can get that thing. I think this notion of better blacks and trying to create divide and rule, I think those days are gone. We can't allow people to divide and rule. There must be unity of purpose, especially in this industry, given that the Rasta community and given that the growers have come from years, decades of persecution. And now it's a time when the legislation is changing. You need to be at the forefront of benefiting and not those that have benefited in the past. So I think the regulations is going to have to be responsive to this. Mr. Pooban, I wasn't happy with the presentation that you made, because what it did for me was it gave a very legal response and it didn't give me comfort that we as government, and I'm glad that you set the context of all the government departments coming together, and maybe we should have got a broader government representation about the challenges that the stakeholders are raising. So the challenges that the stakeholders are raising is that the unintended consequences of licensing is that we perpetuate racial exclusion of the majority of black people because black people can't afford the license. There's 100 white license owners and there's only 7 black license owners. And so that is an indictment to SAHPRA. So you can't just give me the legal responses technically because that is not the intention of the legislation. The intention of the legislation is to ensure that our people are formalized. We can't have gogos that's growing cannabis, that's making subsistence farming. They just sell to multinationals and they don't themselves benefit. And we don't get the revenue, we don't get tax, we don't formalize the industry. So I think that for us is one of the key things. We hear that it was coordinated by the presidency, and I think that's where it should be located. The president is a big advocate. I think in the last State of the Nation, he said there's a lot of benefits to be derived from us, and we must take our society forward. Jobs can be created, localization, beneficiation, in the construction, all of those things, biodiesel. So I think what we must do is not just move away from just the recreational use, but the commercial use for our country is big. And so I think it's important for us to regulate it and to ensure that we get the proper settings. I mean, there is this big debate about THC and the content and all of those things. But I think for me, we need to, there's two terms that is very important, is the commercialization, the beneficiation for our people, and at the same time, the decriminalization of us. Look, I'm not going to get into the personal beliefs. I think we as a constitutional, we respect religious beliefs, but we also respect people's constitutional rights to practice and believe the way they want to. This is a secular state, and I think we need to ensure that we respect everybody and we celebrate and respect the diversity that is our country. I want to invite members, the presenters now, to just make a concluding remarks. But I'm also encouraging our researchers to look at what are the steps. I took notes for myself, but clearly we only saw the presentations now. And so there's a lot of stuff that we can still process. And I'm sure this requires another debate. I'm sure this requires a joint portfolio committee with other portfolio committees. I can immediately think of our sister organization, the agriculture, DTI, trade and industry, justice, health, and also being coordinated by presidency. So I definitely see this debate must be ongoing. But I think what we can do, we can put some stuff in the works, and the recommendations coming out are some of the issues that we want. I also see our communicators here, and I'm hopeful that we can put out a strong statement about the issues raised in today's portfolio committee. So with that, I want to just quickly invite, let's start with you, Ben. M for Life.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. I'll touch on two comments before I answer some of the questions. The three presenters that spoke about the industry, none of us mentioned the word Dacha. We in the industry, we like to use cannabis sativa or medicinal cannabis. The word Dacha itself has got so many negative connotations attached to it. So if you see any newspaper article and it's got the caption Dacha, it's always negative. Drugs on the road, people smoking it, it's always negative. So the industry, we try not to use the word in our presentation or in our correspondence with anyone because of the negative connotations. I just want to look, I know all the members are honorable, so I'll just refer to you on your name or your surname. April and Bridget brought up the color issue where I mentioned about colored versus black versus white. My presentation did not separate the races, colored, white, and black. I made a point about the funding percentages in South Africa. Now, if you ask the IDC for their access to their records about who gets funded, black businessmen, white businessmen, colored businessmen, you will see that there's a 10% per application. So if there's 100 applicants, 10 people will get funding. That's just how it works. So my point of making that I made is to say that there are 5.6 million colored South Africans. So if there's 10%, at least five of us should have been funded. So I just wanted to make that clear. I did not bring up the color issue, which I feel this might be the worst thing to say on this forum, but it's rich coming from ANC members who has excluded colors from employment in government positions, which has been gazetted. So I'm not the one that brought up color. I just want to, Mr. de Villiers mentioned about, and Ms. Mueller, Nuran Mueller mentioned about a pilot program. Now, we've invested 500 billion rand in COVID relief, and we all know how that went. Why can we not allocate 1 billion rand as a pilot project for at least 8 or 10 farms to be set up? And from that 1 billion rand, we can figure out what is working for everyone and what is good learning, what is the best practices that we can share with each other. De Villiers mentioned about us getting a task force together, a task team to investigate what's the best way to go speak to the Americas, to Europe, Asia. We're 5 years into the industry already. You know, I saw a documentary about an island that's inhabited by some tribe, and they've had no outside interference. They're isolated from the world. Now, imagine we drop 10 automobiles there, 10 Fords or 10 Toyotas on the island. And then 5 years later, we say, okay, this is how we're going to build roads on the island, and this is how we're going to get petrol to the island, and this is how we're going to train you guys how to drive these vehicles. That is what de Villiers is suggesting now, that 5 years down the line, we now want to sit down and figure out what is the best way forward. Us that has been in the industry for the last 5 years, we've done the homework. We've spoken to people in the US, in China, in Australia, in Canada. We've done the research. You need to come to us and talk to us. When the Cannabis and Hemp Master Plan was put together, it was community leaders, traditional healers, and the Rastafarian associations or groups that were part of putting together the master plan. There were no farmers involved. None of the applicants that the 107 SAPRA license holders and the 371 hemp holders, none of us were called into that to put together the master plan. You know, it was traditional leaders, community leaders, traditional healers, and Rastafari. No farmers were called in for the
research. Now, I want you to focus on giving back and responses. And so I'm just giving you like 5 minutes. So please wrap up.
Yeah. Okay. I also want to thank you, Chairperson, for understanding that what my presentation was about. You know, I am a representative of an industry, but I'm also an individual. I did not come here as a disgruntled, colored person. I came here to highlight a problem that's out there, but. If it's being turned into a political argument, then it's. I feel my presentation was pointless. I can't fight against political arguments. That's not. And also, I just want to mention Dr. Kunene has done awesome work. I counted all the projects that she's involved in. I think she's involved in 16 projects. So joining forces with her, she's a very busy woman. I can hear she's got her hands, fingers in all the pies. So, all of us, as we've been fighting in isolation, everyone is fighting in isolation. There are no cannabis or hemp associations in South Africa representing us. We're all doing our own homework, finding our own feet, finding our own way. But thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Sussman. Dr. Kunene, just concluding remarks.
Thank you so much. You know, my conclusion remarks are small business is the most important department right now. When we did the first phase of the National Hemp Foundation, it was small business that became the champion. And the deliverables was make sure small business, make sure small farmers from historically disadvantaged backgrounds, which includes myself and Mr. Hempolite and everybody, all those groups that you mentioned, the Rastas, the healers, the traditional leaders, the traditional farmers. So right now, the biggest opportunity is that presidency has got this PAKISA steering committee. Can small business please come in and say we are going to champion for small businesses? In the last two meetings, small business was not present. And then the second one is that fiber for NAFCOC order, bioplastics for valid order, seed, biodiesel for Scania order, and construction for the Afrimet order. All of that are right now bigger. The only consideration is that we should use local seed that is low THC. Already SAPRA has presented that they've agreed to cater for that. Department of Agriculture has agreed. We just need a champion who'll make sure that happens. The only thing that should fit in the sandbox, because I agree with the honorables, we don't want to do anything illegal. The only thing that should fit in the sandbox is what do we do with our flour? You know, because once you grow seed and fiber, there's gonna be flour. In the past, they made us put the flour in the back on earth, which really, as the Hempolite told you, that's the biggest money. So I would really ask that you do need to go to the research, whatever, but all the research has been done. Let us put a team with us who've got these four big orders, and let us form four value chain aggregators to see. Just with Scania alone, you're talking about 2.5 million people. For me, I think we shouldn't wait until next year. We should, from this meeting, put a team together and let's go for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kunene. Concluding remarks, Mr. Prince.
Thank you so much for this portfolio committee to give us this opportunity to demonstrate really how we would be able to work with all South Africans in order to improve all of our lives. With cannabis, we have a very concrete opportunity to do that. There are a few other things that really provides us with an opportunity to, in a sustainable manner, advance all of our lives. And we have an important story to tell, and it is important that we tell that story and that we do not allow foreign voices to whisper and dictate our thought process around this plant. We have the opportunity to be creative, and we can do pioneering work in this regard if there's simply the willpower. And I believe that this government, that they want to work for the betterment of all people, and that with the cannabis community, we can do it. Let us put South Africans to work instead of putting them under stress or putting them in prison. We possess certain distinctive competitive advantages, and the longer we drag, the greater becomes the opportunity that we're going to lose those. It is entirely possible. This is a sunrise industry, and we understand that it's not going to be easy, but the people are willing and the government is willing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Prince. Mr. Puvan, you have the last word.
Thank you. think in conclusion, I just wanted to make about 3 or 4 points. The first point is around medicines. Medicines are medicines. They have very large requirements. So if the sort of market that you want to play in is with regards to medicines, you have to meet very, very stringent requirements. And medicines is only one of the demand pathways that we have for this plant. And I think that knowing all the things portfolio committee and knowing what's happening in those spaces and who's responsible and who needs to take that up and help the economy around this plant needs to, that needs to be taken into cognizance, not just the medicines regulator, because it is a multi-sectoral approach under the Cannabis Master Plan. The other thing that I wanted to just make in closing is that South Africa as a country is a signatory to conventions around control of controlled substances. So there will be lots of checks and balances that are in place regarding this. As long as we are a signatory to the INCB, we need to make sure that those things happen, not just at the Department of Health /SAHPRA, but anybody who's going to be working around this plant, the Department of Agriculture, with our institutional arrangements done, we need to make sure that we adhere to our obligations, but still enable the economy around this plant. As a regulator, our main tools are legislation and regulations and those sorts of things. And those are our tools to create opportunities. So the opportunities that we are creating with the changing of the schedules need to be taken up by the other government departments that are busy with this. We've heard many talk around the demand pathways for the low THC from Dr. Kunene, and those sorts of things. So what she's saying is correct. There are opportunities that, but we as a regulator have to create legislative mechanisms around that, and there needs to be other departments that take those opportunities, such as small business, such as Department of Agriculture, to create opportunities for people to participate in the economy. I think that that's all from my side, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much to each and every one of you that has participated, especially our presenters, but also members and also the public out there. This debate is not concluded. I think cannabis, hemp, tango, Taha, I as a chair certainly won't use different nomenclatures, and I think we need to be tolerant. We need to also embrace, because yes, the Rasta communities does use the word Taha, and yes, it has been stigmatized, and yes, we want to use this as a sunrise industry. I think for us as legislators, there's a lot to chew on. And I think as many of us have said that we certainly need to take the issues forward. I think the one clear point that I want us to leave here is that access to finance, access to opportunities should be available for all South Africans. And so, Mr. Sussman, I would like to take your details and follow up with your issue. Look, we are the politicians, so I would want to invite you for us to play the politics and deal with this. But I think from a government point of view is that we need to ensure that everybody's dreams are realized, everybody has realized their full potential. And I think that's what we want to do. Yes, we can. It's election season, and I'm sure the parties will vie for your vote. But as government, we need to ensure that all South Africans get working, get on board. And this industry represents an opportunity for reset. It is an opportunity for us to bring our people together. It's an opportunity for a new revenue stream, for tax, for job creation and beneficiation through the whole value chain. But we can't do things the way we used to do it, where only certain groups of people benefit from it. And so I think all of the issues that was presented today is food for thought. I want to thank members. I know you have to rush back to the house. So that's why I have to release members before 1 o'clock. So with that, I want to thank everybody again. I want to ask the researchers and the team just to see how we can process some of these things and what are the next steps. and what are the administrative follow-ups that we can make to the different departments, whether it's the presidency, whether it's agencies, funding agents, so that we can indeed make a contribution. I hope this will not be the last. It's not only the talk show, but hopefully we can realize all of those work streams that that have been outlined. So with that, I want to thank you all once again and say the meeting stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And
bye.
One love, Chair. Thank you very much.